You are about to opt in to Monerotopia, a show for the Monero community where all are welcome to join. From noob to maxi, no matter what bags you hold. Just sit back and relax to the sweet sounds of Monero's latest progress. Or if you're feeling inspired, join us on stage. Remember, the only thing that can stop Monero is a false belief that it can be stopped. And if you want to win the revolution faster, we recommend you remove your XMR from all custodial exchanges immediately. Warning, boating accidents are common around here. Don't forget to properly secure your private keys. Monerotopia starts now.
Alrighty. What's going on?
What's up?
How's it going, man? Long time. Long time no see.
Long time, yep.
We had fun. That was good, man. I enjoyed the in-person time. That was a good time. How about you?
Yeah, it was good. Finny Forum was really cool. And of course you had that imposter on your show, that not penguin person. You definitely
It definitely was not the real Tux. I thought Finny Forum was great, hanging out with everybody. There was a good Monero crowd down there. We all got to bond, chat, all positive stuff. I wish I would have gotten to engage with the Samurai crew a little bit more in person, as opposed to online, where it's just a fucking shit show all the time. I just feel bad for those guys that they just keep it so negative over there. You know, it's like it's just not a good way to live. There's more to life than being a fucking asshole on Twitter. And like, if you're doing it 24/7, I mean, that just can't be good. Good for the body, the mind, the soul. Yeah, man. T-Devs, if we would have met in person, I would have gladly given you a big hug, because I really think you need one. Yeah, that was my only regret, not being able to communicate with those guys in person. And then it's like, as soon as we get back, the attacks begin. It's like, I was there, guys. You could have came up to me. You could have walked up to me. We could have had a conversation. You didn't have to wait to a week later to start bashing me on Twitter. It all stemmed from me sending out a tweet about the Bitcoin fog case, and for some reason that triggered them.
They're also mad you had Nopara on the stream.
Right, which was months ago, right?
Yeah, which is a while ago. You want it to be a fair playing field, so like, you've also invited T-Dev to come on and dispel any BS that Nopara may have said about Samurai or Wasabi or whatever. And of course, it's like, he was denied, you know? It's not like you're only allowing certain people on, certain people not. You want it to be a level playing field for everyone to give their opinion, but, you know, that's, instead of him coming on, he's just mad on...
Yeah, I'm surprised by the cancel culture that's in the within the T-Dev cult. It doesn't seem to align with what they're supposed to stand for. I get that they disagree with what Wasabi's doing. They don't like their tools. But to try to persecute a podcast that's about digital cash, for having somebody come on and talk about the product that they built that a lot of people use, I don't know. It doesn't seem right. I mean, what's really going on here, it's all about their user base. It's all about making sales. They try to sell themselves like that they're these honorable crypto anarchists that are just building code. They're running a business, and they make money off of people using Samurai Wallet, which is fine. But don't act like you're all virtuous, that you're above it all. You're trying to make sales. You want people to use Samurai. You don't want them to use the competition. Is Samurai better than the competition? From what I understand, it is. So win on the merits. You know, don't win by trying to completely shut down any conversation regarding the competition, because then you just come across as a hypocrite. You're just exuding cancel culture, and it really just doesn't align with the cypherpunk values of free speech. And I think a lot of people see the hypocrisy in that. And it turns into them then attacking the Monero community. I don't know if you've seen any of that. I mean, there's a ton of bullshit being thrown back and forth. But you got people from the Samurai cult, or let's call it the T-Dev cult, basically accusing the Monero project and community of being statist. I mean, they, like, you've completely lost the plot at that point, when you're building a product that supports a surveillance coin, you're offering services for washing those coins. That's great. And you find yourself calling the Monero project, the most cypherpunk crypto that exists, a status project run by status. I mean, you've completely lost all credibility at that point. You know, people see it. You're putting those tweets out there, like you're getting away with a lot of shit. But when people start to see that, you're starting to show your true colors and show that you're really, at the end of the day, you're just a profit-driven company that's VC-funded, by the way. I mean, I could start bringing up links. Yeah, I mean, they have funding. In fact, one of the people that funds them is the same group, same VC firm that has given funding to Wasabi Wallet. Yeah. I mean, you know, unless my Googles are incorrect, I'm sure they're losing their shit right now as they watch this, because we know they do. Yeah, I was gonna send a tweet out. I mean, I really don't like going down the rabbit holes with them, because like, what do I care? I mean, just use Monero. The whole Bitcoin privacy realm is a fucking shit show. The people that are in it, the products themselves, it's just disgusting. And then you have Monero, and it's just humming along, doing its thing, being digital cash. But yeah, they are VC funded. You can look it up. It just takes a Google. They have, wait, let me see, actually, if I can pull this up here. Yeah, 1031 VC. That's, you know, VC firm. They're one of the, I guess, the early funders of Samurai Wallet. Cypherpunk HODL. They're also listed as a funder. They have also funded Wasabi Wallet. But if you go to Cypherpunk HODL, it only shows Samurai Wallet, like, on the front page. But then you have to go through, and you see that they've also funded Wasabi Wallet at some point. These are the guys that, on their website, they remark that, we are privacy activists who have dedicated our lives to creating the software that Silicon Valley will never build, the regulators will never allow, and the VCs will never invest in. Okay. I mean, you're literally lying on the front of your fucking website, on your About Samurai page. You know, the virtuous cypherpunks who are here to fight the status. Yeah, it's a profit driven company. Is it good tech? Sure. And now here you are. You're lying. You're lying about you know, that you're not backed by VCs, or I guess they say it in a tricky way, and that VCs will never invest in. Well, from what I could tell, the VCs have invested in you. Regulators will never allow. I mean, we've seen them. I don't know if you remember, they wrote that letter to FinCEN in cooperation with some of the biggest KYC firms in existence in crypto. They wrote a letter to FinCEN asking them not to pass the regulations that they're looking to pass. So, you know, these cypherpunks that don't deal with regulators seem to be dealing with regulators. I could go on and on about it. I'd rather not. I was going to send a tweet out about it. I think I will, because I think the information needs to be out there, right? Because I think they just get a free pass. I feel like they get a free pass. And I also think that's why they're so offensive, because offense is the best form of defense, right? So they're constantly on the offensive, attacking, and they've built this moat around them. And I think a lot of people are afraid to kind of attack them because of what they've, you know, the culture that they have. You know, I've had people on this show even that, you know, were kind of unwilling to go there with Samurai. So they've done a good job at creating this cult and creating an environment where speech is completely chilled, where if you say anything against them, you're shunned. It's like BTC maximalism, which is quite ironic, because that's a big part of, you know, what they're supposed to be opposed to. And now they've
created a sector of it.
Yeah, they've created their own cult, and they're not a cryptocurrency. They're not some decentralized technology. They're a for-profit company that makes money off of you washing your Bitcoins using their tools. They want Bitcoin to be fundamentally traceable, because if it wasn't, their company would no longer exist. If Bitcoin were Monero, Samurai would not be needed. It's a complete fucking joke that you have to go pay this company to wash your coins, and they act like they're fucking saving the world. I mean, is it good tech? I guess compared to the other Bitcoin privacy tools, yeah, it's the best one. But just use Monero. And if you're them, just add Monero to your app. What are you doing? It's a lot simpler than all the fucking hoops you're creating that people need to jump through and pay you money along the way, pay you these fees to wash and clean your Bitcoin. Just use Monero. I mean, yeah, the hypocrisy is just fucking insane. And I see people in the Monero community that are very, you know, they're reluctant. They're reluctant, you know, because they've done a good job at building this moat and scaring people into going along with them. Otherwise, they persecute you, and they got their little group of cult followers that will jump on. But I mean, if you look at, don't be scared, guys. It's the same five guys that are out there. It's the same five accounts. I'm sure TDev runs three accounts of his own. So don't fear the samurai group. Don't feel like you have to kiss their ass. Monero is the coin of the cypherpunks. They're the ones with their head down building decentralized digital cash, right? That's who's doing it. For them to call Monero the status coin, the status project, is completely fucking absurd. I get we wanted them to add Bitcoin to Monero atomic swaps. They did that. That's great. They'll do that. I don't know. I'm not running over there to trade my Monero for dirty Bitcoin. I mean, I think it's cool that it's there. We'll get more people will learn about Monero that way. People that are using Samurai Wallet to clean their Bitcoin will be like, wait a minute. So these tools don't ultimately work. Like I gotta swap into Monero. Why don't I just stay in Monero? Why don't I use Monero? I think it's great for that. But am I going to sit here and continue to kiss their ass because they added Bitcoin to Monero atomic swaps? An implementation that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Tux. Did they build this implementation? No. I mean, this was taken from other devs that did it. They polished it up, created a UX for it to implement it in their wallet. So I think they get a little too much credit, and they're given a little too much leeway, and so I'm out here speaking the truth. And guys, do your own research. If you're a Bitcoin person that's looking to clean your coins, yeah, Samurai I guess is the best option, but by far your better option is to just use Monero. And research the company itself. Once again, they are very much a for-profit company that is driven by profit, that has investors that they have to answer to. They are not a decentralized piece of software that has no investors, that has no profit motive. So remember that when you're dealing with them. The branding is great, the samurai, but they certainly don't fucking act like samurais. They act like fools. That's my rant. I don't know, Tux. You got anything to add there? I don't want to bring you into this battle, but that's my take. Correct me where I'm wrong. Now, the criticisms of Wasabi, sure. Do I know? I don't like spend my time researching Bitcoin privacy tech, because I think it's a waste of time. Use Monero.
I mean, no matter what it is, it's going to fall very, very, very short of just using Monero. I don't think it's a bad thing that people are bringing privacy to Bitcoin to like more mainstream, but at the same time, it's a lot of money and a lot of like extra effort and time when you could just use Monero.
For sure. All right. We got 80 live viewers, people strolling in as I continue my rant. Let's go. I guess, only thing else I want to get out there, let me do a quick, screen share here. Monerotopia 2024, Buenos Aires, November 1st to 3rd. Get your ticket, guys. More importantly, reach out to us at monerotopia@protonmail.com if you want to participate. In any way, you want to come and be a vendor, you want to come and be a speaker, you want to be a sponsor. We haven't really actively put the word out with sponsors. We individually hit people up that we know might want to participate. But if you're somebody out there that watches this show and wants to sponsor the conference, particularly if you're a privacy tech project that thinks you can, you know, that thinks you align with what we're doing here, reach out to us. It's worked out very well for our sponsors in the past. We've added so far, I think we've only added the Zano project. They've agreed to sponsor us. They sponsored us last year. That was fantastic. We had the whole team there. We had Andre, who is the lead dev for Zano and also the guy who created the first implementation of CryptoNote, which is what eventually became Monero. And him and his team were there. They were interacting with the Monero devs. People were asking them hard questions. They will be back again. This week, Zano just launched a major upgrade to their protocol, Zarkanium, I believe it's called. I hope I'm not mispronouncing that. Very, very exciting. There was a Spaces about it that was happening with Roger Ver. Roger Ver in the Spaces said that he would come to Monerotopia. We'll see if that actually happens.
Nice.
So we try to get him as a speaker. I think Roger Ver is one of these characters that has been kind of mistreated in the early days. He was a very important part of Bitcoin, one of the earliest official investors in Bitcoin, and with the gains that he made, he invested in a lot of projects along the way that became important utilities in the crypto sphere. And one of the projects he's now excited about is Zano. So do your research on Zano. Good way to do it is to actually watch some of the old Monerotopia videos from last conference. But yeah, they'll be sponsoring again. Super excited. We're going to have DarkFi down there, Rachel Rose, Amir Taki, obviously the Monero devs. We have Francisco, Luke Parker, Justin Berman. Luke is not 100% after talking to him at Finiform, but hopefully we could get him to fully commit. I know he he'll be at MoneroCon. He wants to come to Monerotopia, but he's not 100 yet. Francisco's in 100, Justin's in 100, Ruknium, but he will be remain anonymous and do it virtually. He's kind of our expert on doing empirical analysis of the Monero, you know, Monero privacy decoy system. He's constantly kind of doing statistical analysis of that. So super cool that he'll be talking again. Pavel of Liberty Travel, and he's also one of the main founders of Parnelli Polis. Always great to have him. Liam Egan, a researcher at Zeta Function Technologies and founding cryptographer at Alpha Labs. This guy's like the real deal cypherpunk. He will be there. I'm not sure what he's going to be talking about. And yeah, Savil, who's part of Zano team. Ralph Van Wegberg, we've had him on a few times. He'll be there in person giving a talk. He's done a great job at studying the dark markets and Monero's usage there. So he always brings a lot of interesting information. And yeah, tons and tons of more content is going to be added to the Monerotopia conference as we grow. It's still very early days. It's going to be at Plaza Serrano, which is a marketplace, popular destination in Buenos Aires. It's an outdoor marketplace that happens on the weekends, and we're going to do the conference alongside that. And we are going, in the months building up to the conference, we are going to onboard the vendors to Monero. Actually, next week on Monerotopia, we're going to have somebody out there live streaming from Plaza Serrano, giving us the update on what's going on. People can see what Plaza Serrano is all about. And there'll be talks, you know, they'll be going out there to talk to the vendors, but they'll also jump on the live stream. So that's going to be cool. And yeah, that's really it for Monerotopia for now. We have Copa Monero, which is a part of it. That's a soccer tournament that's happening in Formosa in Argentina, where 12 local teams will be competing for a Monero prize. A lot more information on that coming very soon. Those games are going to start streaming in, I believe, we're trying to push it back to April. There's going to be 12 games. They're going to happen on Sundays. There's going to be 15 games total. We're going to stream all of them. Super excited about that. And I'll just be talking more about that as we get closer to those dates. So Once again, most importantly, Monerotopia at protonmail.com. If you want to participate in any way, please reach out. Let us know. We'll figure something out. That's all I got for stuff I need to shill for now. Let's jump to the price report. Unless, Tux, is there anything you want to put out there?
No. I think that's pretty much it.
Tux, you'll be down there, right? We got you. You're dedicated. Yeah,
totally.
You're in? All right.
Totally.
Yeah, I know we didn't officially announce Cake Wallet as a sponsor yet, but I know Vic is in. I spoke to him at Finny Forum. We just want to kind of close the deal there, and then we'll officially announce Cake. We got a bunch of other projects we're talking to. Basic Swap, who was there last year, we're talking to. Fiero Project. Like I said, DarkFi will be a part of it, and we're talking to a lot of other privacy tech projects. I'd like to get Zcash down there. Somebody down there talking about Zcash. I'd like to get, I don't know, maybe dare I say Darrow? Do we want Darrow involved? I mean, why not? Let him come and, you know, rather than hearing them on Twitter just freaking shilling their stuff all day, if they have something important to come out and talk about from a tech perspective, they're welcome to participate. And we don't just give a platform where people get to shill their stuff. It comes with a crowd who is very intelligent and well-versed in this stuff, more so than I am, and they get asked tough questions on stage. So it's not just about giving people a stage to shill their coin. They could come, they can present on it from a technical perspective, and then they will get grilled from the Monerotopia audience. So anybody that's working on a project that's, you know, that you think is privacy tech related, digital cash related, reach out to us, Monerotopia at protonmail.com. All right, we're at 101. Oh, no, wait, this might be, right? We're seeing the creep up from the Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter counter.
The Twitter counter. Let's move on to the price report.
All right, let's do it.
The Monerotopia Price Report segment is sponsored by Local Monero. Avoid using KYC exchanges. Buy and sell Monero directly for fiat, peer-to-peer.
Good morning.
Good morning, buddy. How's it going, man?
It's great, man. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. Chilling.
Other than the Twitter, the flame wars with Samurai.
Yeah, that's all good. It's fun to roll in the mud every now and then. You know yeah, how it is.
I'm probably a minority opinion here, but I kind of think it's a good thing that there's a forum to express those ideas. But to me, like, incumbent upon being kind of rough around the edges on social media is that in real life, you need to be willing to come to have like a very polite, real conversation with people. And like, you need to be willing to dial it back, you know, like, all right, we've talked enough shit. Let's talk about some real stuff. I'm not actually like that terrible of a person, you know, like,
right.
If all you can do is sit there and flame and then be pissed off all the time, like you have to balance that with also being a reasonable person.
I couldn't agree with you more, man. And it must be very very exhausting from their standpoint, right? I mean, to just be in that flame mode 24/7, not a way to live.
When you take the whole like business aspect into account and that they're VC funded and all this, you know, it's a business, they're making money. It does make sense why there's such like some of these people in the Samurai community are like hypocrites, because
like here we go, we got Bill, sorry to interrupt, Tux, we got Bill you're missing the point, Douglas. Why do you red carpet? I didn't red carpet. I had the guy on my show. Now, was I like super well versed in Wasabi and Samurai to be the best person for grilling him? No, I was not. I absolutely was not, and I've stated that. But then the Samurai reaction is, or T-Dev's reaction is, Tooman's a fucking dolt. He's a fucking idiot. He had this guy on, and he didn't do his research. I had him on the show. We talked. My research was having him on the show, and I got his point of view, and I'm more than happy to have the other point of view. Come on the show. Bill Paragi, jump on and tell us all about it. I don't know. Find somebody else, and I'll do a thorough Monero talk with them from the standpoint of why Wasabi Wallet sucks. But don't sit here and crucify me for having a guy on a podcast that's about digital cash who built an app that's being used for Bitcoin privacy tech, right? I'm sure it has its flaws. We know it has its flaws. Samurai Wallet, I'm sure, comes with with some flaws as well, right? It's not a perfect piece of technology. Monero, we know, is not a perfect piece of technology either. But yeah, I didn't red carpet the guy. You cover your ass saying it's about free speech. It is about free speech, man. Or, you know, it's about me. I run the Monero Talk podcast. I gotta have whoever the fuck I want on the show. You don't have to listen to it. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to gauge in it. I know it pisses you off that I had your competitor on the show, but just beat them on the merits. Beat them on the merits. You're more than
what to me.
Yeah, it's like extreme. It's like what are they hiding? What are they so afraid of?
Listen, I wouldn't want to go up against the Samurai devs, and although I'm not a developer, you know, I consider myself like a somewhat advanced pleb. I wouldn't want to have to debate those guys. Like they're pretty smart. I don't think I'd even want to debate the Wasabi guys. I mean, also, I don't really, you know, I understand the basics of their protocol, but I wouldn't really want to have to debate them on the specifics of their implementation or which is better or anything like that. So I can understand why people sort of back down from them because these guys, like, they do take the time to go out there. Like, when they're flaming on Twitter, they also, one thing I do like about them is they do a good job of kind of like talking shit while also like bringing the technical arguments. But yeah, I mean, at that level, like, those guys are so far above our pleb level. Like, how do we know? Like, how the fuck do I know which of these guys is the best privacy or if either of them are even good privacy at all? So it really is just incumbent upon them to have a conversation with their competitors in front of everybody. Because, like, how do any of us really know? We just don't. Like, we're plebs, you know? Please come on the show and explain it to us in terms we can understand and then debate each other, right? So that we can see how you comport yourselves and see what kind of arguments you bring. And then, you know, talk to our smart guys and we can be like, all right, Monero smart guys, what did y'all take away from this stuff from a debate? But don't just gatekeep and say, oh, you're not allowed to have other people on the show or we're going to talk shit about you because you had someone on the show. Like, it's not like you brought Craig fake Satoshi Wright on Monero Talk or anything.
Right.
Please.
It's a widely used app. I mean, I guess maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe it's a lot more nefarious than I understand. But it seems to be that most people that, you know, it's kind of common knowledge out there, I guess, of what Wasabi is doing. So I guess it's up to people if they want to use it or not. But they're saying, I don't know, that it's a lot more nefarious than we understand, that it's actually, you know, Wasabi is in cahoots with law enforcement and all this stuff, which that's fine, guys. Go fight that battle. I just had the guy on my show. I don't know what to tell you.
On both sides of this argument. So like maximalists basically hate, Samurai. The maximalists, for whatever reason, just really, really dislike Samurai. But it seems like there's a whole bunch of stuff to dislike about Wasabi. And like, okay, let's subtract the personal stuff from it and just talk about the tech. Like, there's criticism that goes around both sides all the time. How the hell do I know which of them to use? It seems like everyone tends to respect Monero. Even people that don't like it are still kind of like, yeah, the privacy is still pretty good, but it's a shitcoin. Okay, whatever, but at least the privacy works. No one can even agree on whether Samurai or Wasabi works, so why take the chance? And, oh, by the way, we kind of learned with Tornado Cash that gaining profit by providing a mixing platform is kind of dangerous territory. I'm not saying anything will happen there, but...
Body, you status cuck, you. Are you accusing Samurai of... Like, that would be the response to that one. Like, how dare you even suggest that? Like, yeah, no, that's fact.
I was agreeing with your just like off of the whole business thing earlier, because it seems like a lot of the people in the, like, especially the TDev guy, it seems he's like so hypocritical, where he's like this big bad boy cypherpunk, but then shits on other projects and other people that are pushing the envelope forward with competing, which not really competing, but for their business competing products like Monero, and other people that, you know, have people on the show who are competing with them. And I know they have, it was the BTC to XMR swaps, right? So they do have that. So they're not totally like anti Monero or anything, but I know they kind of were before and they backed off of that now, but it does seem super hypocritical that they're super gatekeepy and they totally attack like so many individuals in the space who are just doing effectively the same thing they are, is trying to push privacy products, but, you know, can't possibly have something competing if all their goal is to just make money off of this. Because they're making money off of a broken system, basically, and they're able to make I guess, a decent amount of money off of it.
Exactly. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make. Yeah, they're making money off of selling away to wash your Bitcoin. Bitcoin is, you know, that doesn't function well as a privacy tool. So they make their money off offering away for people to clean their Bitcoin. And so, you know, the Monero is competition with them in that respect, because if everybody's using Monero, there's no need
to wash your Bitcoin.
To wash your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
A for-profit company who makes money off of washing people's Bitcoin. Every time you go and use Samurai, you're paying fees to a company called Samurai. They make money off of you because Bitcoin is a surveillance tool.
Well, what is more interesting to me is the VC funding, because we've seen what's happened to VC-funded privacy companies in the past.
Right. And what's most concerning about that is they claim to not be VC-funded.
Do we know which VCs?
Oh, 1031 and Cypherpunk Holdings.
Yeah.
Those are the two recent ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any big names associated?
Yeah. 1031 is, what's his name? Matt. What's that guy's name? Let me just do a screen share for a sec. Hold on a sec. Can I do a screen share here?
Mm-hmm. Yep. You may pull up.
Do I need to stop mine?
Yeah.
Because right now I'm screen sharing. I mean, not live, but, you know, in my personal. Oh, okay. Never mind. Yeah. One small point is that, The atomic swaps that they do, that Samurai does with Monero, are for their DOX exchange. It's like kind of your, I don't understand the implementation, but it's your leftover change from after doing the mixing that's not really straightforward to mix again. So they implemented an atomic swap to Monero so that they could, Marty Bent, Jesus.
It's Marty Bent.
Marty Bent.
No, it was because he invested in that VC.
Right. So Vic is a part owner of Samurai Wallet. I mean,
I believe Marty Bent was, he was one of the promoters of, what was one of the big exchanges or one of the big bankruptcies of 2022? It was one of the first ones. I can't remember their name anymore. Already relegated to the forgotten bankruptcies. What was it called? It was one of the major bankruptcies that a lot of the maximalists had shilled. Doesn't matter.
So yeah, here if you go on the Samurai page, we are privacy activists. We are privacy activists who have dedicated our lives to creating the software that Silicon Valley will never build, the regulators will never allow, and the VCs will never invest in. You guys are VC. You guys have VC investors. You got, right? I mean, like that's literally your about section on your page. I mean, that's very deceitful.
To be fair, Marty Bent isn't exactly like a TradFi VC. He's, you know, he's a Bitcoin maximalist that kind of, you know, got popular with his podcast, and then with his buddy, they funded different projects.
Yeah, sure, but you know, you have investors that you have to answer to, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's
you're a for-profit company, and then here, let's look at this one. Then we have Cypherpunk Holdings. Let's bring that up. That's their other investor. Cypherpunk Holdings, investing in the Bitcoin ecosystem. I don't know who's behind them, but if you go down and it shows who, look who they've invested in. Samurai Wallet and Wasabi Wallet. That's incredible, guys.
So funny.
They're one of the companies that controls their company also has a say in Wasabi Wallet as part of the, like, they, you know. So, I mean,
the BlackRock of crypto.
Yeah.
They own all of these companies, even ones that are competing directly with each other.
And then they have in their statement, we will never, the regulators will never allow, and the VCs will never invest in. There's a VC firm invested in them that's invested in their competitor. Their competitor that's aligned with the chain analysis companies. So is Samurai Wallet effectively aligned with the chain analysis companies too? If you take that logic that far, I mean, it's just fucking ridiculous. They should change their about section, and they should change their marketing and the things they say, because they're effectively lying to people. So, you know, they got good tech, but they're lying to people. And the other point is too, Silicon Valley will never build, the regulators will never allow. One of the things that this turned into is criticism of Monero, calling Monero a status coin, a status project, you know, saying they bring up comply first. I don't know if you guys remember what that was, but it never gained traction, but it was this idea that there was a group that was going to try to, in Monero, that was, I guess, going to try to deal with regulators and whatnot, and I don't know, maybe try to help exchanges figure out how to legally add Monero, whatever it may be. But yes, Samurai Wallet would never participate in anything like that. But I mean, here you have them here. Here we go. Samurai Wallet, Strike, and others ask FinCEN to withdraw proposed rules tied to crypto mixing. So here it was Samurai Wallet working with Strike, who's like the most KYC'd, pro-KYC crypto company that exists, right?
Strike is the most status company in all of the Bitcoin ecosystem. Like, they are.
Here's Samurai Wallet teaming up with Strike to write a letter to the regulators, pleading with them, saying, please don't regulate us. That doesn't sound very cypherpunk to me. That doesn't sound like the ultimate cypherpunks. And I get it. You're a company. You're doing what you got to do, which is fine. But then don't market yourself like you're not. You're not some group of cypherpunks building some decentralized privacy tech system. You're a for-profit company that's teaming up with companies in the space that you criticize for being pro-KYC, for being pro-chain analysis. You're literally teaming up with them to plead to regulators to ask them for permission. You don't get less cypherpunk than that. So, I mean, that's fine. I get, do what you got to do, but don't act like you're something else.
I want to speak for a second on that comply first thing, because that thing gets a lot of shit from people who don't even know what it was. The name is really, really bad. It was literally just a group designed to show centralized exchanges that, hey, you can use privacy coins with the existing regulation in place. It was not designed to make Monero or any other crypto project more compliant. It was designed to show that you can, while following AML KYC stuff, you can have privacy coins, because privacy coins have been constantly demonized and removed, and they want to make it more available. But that thing ended up falling through completely, and multiple people pulled out of it anyway, because it didn't end up going through. And the name was really, really, really bad. The name scared a lot of people away, because Comply First doesn't make sense.
And Comply First is not Monero, right? It was a group.
No, it's not Monero. It was just a coalition of multiple people and multiple groups. And this is the reason that the Gabriel Custodiette guy, one of the concerns he had with the one, he wouldn't specify anything else, is this Comply First thing that Cake was a part of years ago. But Cake pulled out of it due to concerns themselves. They pulled out of it. But once again, to reiterate, it has nothing to do with compliance. It's just showing companies that you can, with your existing infrastructure, have privacy coins. That was it. That was
right.
It.
That was like the Koi white paper that the community, actually, I think it was like Fluffy Pony and others funded.
Fluffy Pony was the guy who mainly started that, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah. The Koi white paper was basically a law, big time law firm that came out with the paper basically saying it's perfectly legal for exchanges in the U.S. to have Monero. Should we have not gone that route? Should we have not told the exchanges that it's legal to have Monero, giving plebs access to digital cash? Like, what's wrong with that? We obviously all agree that the best way to obtain Monero is without KYC.
No one disagrees with that.
No one disagrees with that.
This TDIP guy, he gets mad when people suggest using centralized exchange in Monero. He gets mad when people, like, he was calling a bunch of people XMR compliance fruits because they were all glad that Binance delisted Monero. He's such a hypocrite. No matter what way you do it, you're just like an XMR compliance fruit.
I mean, look at this picture. It's literally a fruit shake in a blender. You don't get more compliance fruit than this. Samurai Wallet teaming up with Strike to write letters to FinCEN. That's as compliance fruity as you fucking get. Just keep it up there, guys. let the people see. Am I misinterpreting this? Is this wrong? Am I off base somewhere?
No, I think they're just trolls, and they have a business. They want to sell a product, and they don't want competition. I think really that's it. That's what it mostly boils down to. And then they have their group, you know, like people that are on the end. They have to like follow their general consensus on interacting with certain people.
What would Gabriel Custodiette say about this? That Samurai Wallet teamed up with Strike and some of the other most KYC, pro KYC firms in the space to us to write to the regulators and plead with them. How is that not the equivalent of comply first?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'll never find out because I did an episode with this guy a couple months ago. And part of it was me talking about Monero stuff. Part of it was me talking about Cake stuff. And then a couple days before he was going to release it, he brought up the comply first thing, and I explained it to him. And then I was like, okay, anything else? And he just blankly said that Cake doesn't align with his values, so he will not go forward with the episode, blah, blah, blah. And then I pressed him, like, hey, what are you concerned about? What are these concerns? Wouldn't give me any information at all. Nothing. And then he ended up just out of the blue, just blocking me completely on Twitter and blocking Cake account too. So just like totally just like a backdoor thing. It's almost like he was, you know, the TDIV guy was like telling him like, hey, you can't involve Cake now. You can't do episode with them. It's not okay.
It was him not telling him no. Yeah, it was him not having the balls to talk to you because he was scared that Big Daddy T-Dev was going to yell at him. That's exactly what it was. And that's what they do in this cult, the T-Dev cult. He has everybody licking his boots because they're terrified of him, because if anyone speaks out, they get fucking crucified. It's like worse than the BTC Maxi crowd.
I was going to say, isn't this the standard, the go-to tactics strategy of Bitcoiners, Bitcoin maximalists?
100%.
Seen over and over again. Which is funny because he's been attacked like ruthlessly by the maximalists, or I mean just Samurai in general has been attacked so much by Bitcoin maximalists. Maybe he's traumatized, you know, so hurt people.
It's true.
He's definitely a hurt person.
You know what, the compliance stuff, I think it's really interesting how it's not about the regulations. It's very clearly not about the regulations because there was that paper about Monero and about how compliant, like you can be compliant with Monero. And then there's other information, even from government sources itself, Office of the Comptroller of the Currency of the United States, which is like the lead regulator for United States banks. They had said back in 2020, I believe it was 2020, they said that that even anonymity enhanced cryptos could be compliant. They effectively made a comparison to cash and said that they have robust procedures in place for financial institutions to be able to comply. And so it's not about the regulations. It's about the effect of what Monero and what true privacy does to their sort of deep state systems, to the things that they don't admit out in the open. Monero defeats a lot of that. And so it has to be removed, right? It has to be taken off of Binance. It's probably going to get delisted across Europe. And so it's like, okay, it's not about the regulations. It's about whether or not they can spy on you. And the regulations are just the excuse, you know, they got millions of them. So that's just the excuse that they can insert, to create a narrative when they need to.
If you find yourself, a quote unquote privacy tech advocate, you're part of the samurai clan cult, and you're out there calling Monero a statist project, you've completely lost the fucking plot. You are working for a for-profit company that washes Bitcoin, that offers people a service for cleaning Bitcoin, because Bitcoin does not work as a privacy tool. So you're promoting this for-profit company while bashing a truly decentralized cypherpunk money and calling it statist. You have completely lost the fucking plot.
As you can see here, if you go to the website complyfirst.org, you can actually see what this was about. And it was only about showing existing companies that you can use privacy coins while it, you know, working with the existing regulation. And furthermore, users of transparent networks such as Bitcoin and Ethereum may also adopt certain privacy functionality that compliance professionals and regulators need to account for. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, unfortunately, much of the discourse on privacy proving cryptocurrency is caused by lack of deep and nuanced technical understanding of these projects, which can differ significantly from better understood public ledger projects such as Bitcoin and Ethereum. Without knowledge of the full workings capabilities of such product, it becomes difficult to provide concrete and actual guidance to compliance professionals and regulators. So it was basically these companies just didn't want to deal with the privacy coins because they didn't know how to. They're scared of it because, you know, privacy, blah, blah, blah. But then they also don't know how to deal with it with their existing system. So it was really just a thing to try and get privacy coins to be accepted more in the mainstream. And obviously, no one is saying that getting KYC'd coins is the best, but getting KYC'd privacy coin is still better than getting a KYC'd Bitcoin, right? So at the end of the day,
I don't see how you could disagree with that. It's like taking cash out of a bank. Is it better to get the cash peer to peer? Sure, the bank doesn't even know like you have it. But when you take the cash out of the bank, they don't know what you do with it afterwards. And so you're getting some freedom there. Is it the most ideal way? No. But it is an on-ramp for people who maybe aren't ready for the most ideal way yet. And it doesn't matter. It's all moot. I mean, Monero is being delisted from all major exchanges. And here we are. You know, we're moving along. I mean, you don't get less status than that. Monero is the complete opposite. It's the most hated coin by governments. And the Monero community is taking it in stride, embracing it, and now building tech that will allow us to exist outside of the fiat system.
I think Samurai, I'm pretty sure I've heard them brag about how no Samurai mixed coin has ever been rejected from an exchange. Interesting. I don't know if they still brag about that, but they definitely have in the past.
I mean, yeah, once again, here's me not knowing enough, but isn't it known that a coin was previously coin joined? Like it's known, right?
Yeah. I think it's more so the Samurai implementation is that it's a large pool and you can't know which coin. It's kind of like Tornado Cash in a way. It's like just a huge pool. So when coins come out, you can't be sure if that was like the first coin that went in or the most recent coin that went in. Whereas CoinJoin is more limited in its implementation where you have a certain number of peers. You do this mixing, some kind of number of rounds of mixing. And then at the end, supposedly, you can't unwind it. There's been a number of articles and a number of criticisms that you can actually unwind it. I think probably only the people that really understand this stuff would be able to tell you yes or no on that one.
Once again, guys, any Samurai experts that are willing to, come up here and talk like a gentleman or a gentle lady, you're more than welcome. Tell us the info without, berating us. You're more than welcome to use this platform for that. All right, buddy, let's get into the price report. Otherwise, we'll be here all day.
Okay. Run the intro for our sponsors, Cake Wallet.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Oh, is that in the price report segment one also, or which one?
Yeah. Run the price report segment.
All right.
Go ahead.
The Monerotopia price report segment is sponsored by Local Monero. Avoid using KYC exchanges. Buy and sell Monero directly for fiat, peer-to-peer.
All right, price report, take two. Hopefully we can talk about price this time.
Yes, and also smash the like, please. We got 52 watching in the YouTube comments, or 52 watching on YouTube Live and only 5 upvotes. I don't know how that works. Maybe it's showing us all the people that are watching over NewPipe. And by the way, for those of you that don't know, if you don't want to give all of your data to YouTube, you can use NewPipe. You don't have any advertisements. Although you can't comment on videos and, shitpost comment on videos. Somehow YouTube appears to have blocked me from commenting sometimes, most of the times. Anyways, but yeah, smash the like and be happy. Okay, so let's start with, with Bitcoin. We've talked about Bitcoin, so might as well start here. We are looking at the regression analysis. I republished this week. I also improved this script in a number of ways. And you'll note, that we have the extrapolation here. You'll notice I changed the colors. So I decided red belongs on the top, right? Because that's like, oh shit, we're getting, this is a lot of price action here where maybe it's getting dangerous. And then green is at the bottom, because green is soft and lovely. And this is where you got to buy because this is where you're going to make your money is at this green line. And then this used to be yellow. The blue line was yellow. Now it's blue because it's like yellow feels like, oh, danger, be careful, slow down. But actually, the way that in some ways, the fact that TradingView booted my last script kind of it made me improve this script somewhat. I took the time to actually improve it in various ways. One of the ways in the description, I realized that the way that you're going to use this chart, you should DCA into Bitcoin at or below the blue line. Like if we're at or below the blue line, you really should just be buying. At least, from a long-term perspective, like that's the thing to do. And then once we get to somewhere within, say, 20% of this red line, that's when you want to be DCAing out of Bitcoin. I published this thing. It's available for anyone. All you have to do is type in /Bitcoin regression. And hopefully today I can spell correctly. right? So you can just Bitcoin regression price boundaries, and that's my script there. So if you double click on it, what you can do is change your line width, you know, just standard stuff. And then you can also tell it how many years forward do you want this thing to extrapolate, right? So you could type in 10 years, and then this thing is going to extrapolate, you know, even further out. So one thing that's kind of weird about this script, so TradingView doesn't provide a straightforward way, at least not that I'm aware of, to extrapolate a function. So what you have to do is, like, you have to tell it to calculate some number of days in advance, and then use, you have to convert everything to Unix time and then convert it back to bars, and then you have to do an offset. Somehow, as an artifact of the way that works, notice that there's this big gap here, right? This gap might show up for you. What you have to do is actually scroll back to the place where the offset starts. It's weird. I wanted to complain at TradingView, but they just don't care. But notice now that that gap filled in. You have to, like, actually see the candle where the offset begins. So if you're offsetting like 10 years in the future, you might have to scroll back here a little bit to get that to fill in. Kind of just a weird artifact of, I don't know, something about TradingView. I've complained many times before about various things. They don't care. So, but, you know, they're still the best thing out there. Like, there is no platform as good as TradingView. PineScript sucks ass, but it's still better than anything else that exists. So what are you going to do? You're going to use PineScript. That's what you're going to do. Unless you're, like, I don't know, in some kind of advanced trading firm where you actually, like, have all of your own data and you store it on your own servers and you can do all of your own cool Python analysis, whatever. Okay, so anyways, yeah, just wanted to show you guys this. This is republished now. We're basically above the, some people like to call this the fair price line or the non-bubble Bitcoin line. One thing you can see here is that the green line and the red lines will intersect in about 2037. So it'll be interesting. This thing is going to break down. This regression analysis will break down. But, you know, for short-term horizons, for something like the 2 to 4 year time horizon, this is probably pretty good. It's useful for us. So, yep, that's published. Enjoy. Hopefully some people get some use out of it. Let's now pivot here to Monero for a little bit. This is the Monero talk, after all. Unfortunately, you know, as usual, there's not much to talk about when it comes to Monero price. We've suffered a little bit of a decline with the rest of the pullback on the markets that happened over the past week or so. We talked last week about expecting the pullback in general to continue for Bitcoin and thus for the rest of crypto. So Monero has also pulled back somewhat, but on slightly happier horizons. We can look at the Bitcoin Monero ratio. And so we've been, you know, we kind of been saying, hey, back here we said, hey, this is kind of the beginning of what might be a bottoming pattern, right? This is bullish divergence on the RSI. Pull up the RSI here. Yeah, so we've got the RSI. And so the RSI has been making higher lows, whereas price has been making lower lows. And in, like, traditional pleb level technical analysis tea leaves reading, this is what you call bullish divergence. And this is definitely a bottoming pattern from a technical standpoint. So you'll notice that, surprise, surprise, as the Bitcoin price has pulled back, the Monero to Bitcoin ratio has gone up somewhat. And we talked about this last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. Effectively, we ran the CUR, or is it CORE, relation analysis. This is the wrong way to spell it. I do this even by myself. You guys have no idea how many times I've sat here and been like, where the fuck is the indicator? Scratch my head for a minute and be like, oh, wait, yeah, of course, I'm bad at spelling. And anyone that follows me on Twitter knows how bad I am at spelling. I don't know. Anyways, kind of makes it difficult as someone who does light programming. But at least with programming, you get, like, little highlights and stuff that tell you that it's spelled wrong. Anyways, so yeah, correlation coefficient, which is the blue bars down here. So you'll notice effectively, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, that the Monero to Bitcoin ratio is anti-correlated with Bitcoin's price and with the total crypto market cap. So as the total crypto market cap goes up, the ratio of Monero to Bitcoin goes down. And this is like a very, very striking anti-correlation. And it basically tells you that, I mean, for all the reasons we've talked about before, nefarious people in the background, most likely trying to prevent visibility of Monero. They don't want you buying Monero. They didn't get it for free. They don't like that it defeats their chain analysis, which is lucrative for them on a number of fronts, not just the compliance front, but also on the we know where the funds are flowing in cryptocurrency front before the plebs do. And so we can front run that. Front running is like the name of the game when it comes to insider crypto trading, crypto dealings. These guys will always have the information before the regular people do. That's just the nature of it. That's going to be true in traditional TradFi markets as well. One thing that's interesting about, just kind of as a sidetrack here, there's so many regulations that exist in TradFi markets, and the goal is to try and prevent a lot of these sort of unfair advantages that happen for players like the market makers in traditional markets or the brokerage firms, right? Because if you're a brokerage firm and you're connecting buyers and sellers, you have an unfair advantage in the sense that you see the order book, you know where funds are flowing, you've got insider information that no one else could have. And so there's all these regulations to try and prevent them from using that that information. Really, it creates a situation where insiders have to do a lot more monkey dancing or dick dancing to get around those regulations in such a way that they won't be prosecuted or whatever. But make no mistake, those kinds of shenanigans still happen in the traditional finance markets. It's just significantly more complex and obscured so that they can have some kind of plausible deniability if they were in a court setting. Whereas in cryptocurrency, like, there are very few regulations against that kind of stuff. And it seems, moreover, that nobody actually cares that much. So it's like the rule, these kinds of like manipulations, you know, wash trading, front running, painting the tape, spoofing every trick in the book that was developed, you know, for the last 100 years or so in traditional markets for which regulations were created. Crypto has just reinvented all of that on a shorter time horizon. So, but, you know, markets are manipulation. This is one of the first things, if you want to trade, you better understand it. Markets are manipulation. There are insiders. There are whales. There are whales that feed on other whales, right? Not all whales are the same size. Just understand that it's a dirty, dirty place out there, and you better get used to it because it's not going to change anytime soon. So don't cry about it. Understand it, learn it, and then see if you can use that to your advantage. So anyways, we've had a lot of negative action on Monero versus Bitcoin for quite a while, but this looks like a bombing pattern. Oh, no. Tab just crashed. Man, I've been having tab crashes lately. I don't know what the hell is going on. Let's try and restore that. At least it restored quickly. Okay. Let's see here. Let's look at the price divergences. There's actually nothing to look at here. Basically oscillating around the zero point. This is kind of what you expect. This is also the absolute price divergence. It's not the volume weighted. I didn't get into beefing up this script. I will do it at some point. It's like homework. It's not like there's an interesting thing being developed. Oh, cool. You know, this and that. It's like, you've got to just like a drone, like go through, okay, we got to add this ticker and then that ticker and then that ticker. And probably I'm going to misspell it 20 times. So I'll eventually get around to beefing up the script and republishing it. It's not that big a deal because I'm not really sure how much it tells us, but maybe it will be revealing once I finally add all of the XMR USDT pairs, XMR USDC, and all the different stable coins out there across all the exchanges and really, really, really truly sum up volume as it exists, at least on the centralized exchanges for which we have reporting here on TradingView. Other than that, there's, same story with the XMR versus ETH price. Again, this is probably some kind of long-term bottoming pattern. That doesn't mean it's turning around tomorrow. That doesn't mean it's going to be turning around even next month. But long-term, this is kind of the bottom. This is accumulation zone territory. It could go on for months, right? It could last for months. So don't think that I'm trying to tell you that that's turning around here, that that's a profitable trade to be made in the short term. It would just be broadly regarded as accumulation. One thing that I forgot about this to mention here on the regression analysis, I also made this script so that you could do, like, you can use any Bitcoin chart now, right? So it still works. It used to be the case that you needed to use the BLX chart. I told you guys previously, you have to use BLX or it's not going to be correct. I fixed that. It's properly oriented around Unix time now. So the calculation is done no matter which chart. It works properly. So you can use that on any chart. And you can use it on any oddball time frame. Like, we can go to the two-day chart and it'll still work for you, except for that weird gap thing I told you about. So this script is nice and beefy now. Should be good. Should be useful. And there's like a master's thesis written about it, not exactly, but the publishing requirements, they want you to really, really explain your script. Putting that aside, this right here is the 1 hour Bitcoin USD chart. Actually, let's zoom out. Let's go to the daily for a minute just so we can get our bearings. I always like to start big and then zoom in. So we're looking here at the Bitcoin USD price chart. We got our purple bands here. This really, really is my target. For a long time, the blue lines were my target. As we got to that area and the macro still looked bullish, we still had money in the reverse repos, there was still liquidity flowing. It was, the game is still on, the direction is still up. After this pullback, showed that it wasn't going to be that much, like, the direction was up, especially after we got back into these blue bands here. And so for the meantime, like, I still tend to think, you know, and it's like the farther up you go, the more dangerous it gets to say that we're going to keep on going. It's easy just to be like, we're going up and up and up and up, and be like, well, I was right 90% of the time, and okay, that was the top, oops, right? And be like, well, but I was right most of the time. Yeah, but you were wrong at the most critical moment, which was the top. At least that's kind of the way I think about it, especially in terms of the way I like to trade, which is, you know, trying to sell the top. I did actually exit one of my shitcoin positions recently, took some very, very nice profits on that. It was kind of one of those situations where I was asking myself, okay, could it go higher? Yeah, potentially. If I lose what I have now, would it be more painful to lose that or more painful to watch the market continue pumping and I sold? And I said, well, if I lose what I just made, like, that will be more painful than to watch the markets continue pumping and miss out on some extra gains. So I basically sold that position. Okay, so basically these purple bands here is kind of what I'm looking at. That's really, really, really where I would be top calling. It would be tentative, right? Who the hell knows if it's the top or not? Like, it's not like we're hitting the top of the regression band or anything. But this would be like my point, like hitting this area right here is like, if I'm wrong and the Bitcoin price just goes stratospheric, parabolic, you will almost certainly have an opportunity to rebuy at 84,000 or 80,000. Bitcoin will pull back at some point to the 80,000 level, almost certainly, if it decides to just continue pumping. But it's also a reasonably good chance, a good spot to say, hey, that could be a top. There could be a longer washout here, you know, down to maybe the 40,000. Who knows, even 30,000, right? So it's kind of the same logic that I had in 2021 where I said, okay, can I be certain that this is the top? No, I don't know. But will I almost certainly, if I'm wrong, will I almost certainly have the opportunity to rebuy at the same level that I'm selling? And the answer to that question was yes. And since the downside risk was so great, it just seemed like a no-brainer. I was like, no, this is like the game theory on this means sell. And I thought, man, if I understand that, if that's really truly the case for me here, there have to be other very smart people that know this as well, other corporations that know this. And, you know, sure enough, that turned out to be basically the top, right? 60,000-ish. Okay, so let's zoom in here to the 1 hour on Bitcoin chart. Yeah, so we basically continue pulling back, as we said last week, to expect to continue pulling back for the rest of the week, that there was probably another down leg here to happen. At this moment, looking on the short-term chart, the one-hour chart, the statistical levels, basically the short-term lower standard deviation bands, so these bands right here, the orange bands, basically price appears to be stabilizing, kind of found some support down there. And then right now is sort of establishing these lower bands here as support. This is very classic wave magic kind of stuff. This thing could shoot off to the top or, you know, it could kind of stay here in these bands. Because this thing has rolled over already, I wouldn't expect that Bitcoin price is just going to immediately try and shoot to the top side for 80,000. It's probably going to take some waffling in the price before it actually decides to make another macro move. Maybe like, so for example, this is one way things could play out. And also I drew this line here. This line doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's just, again, it's a point of reference. Breaking this line would be good. It would say, hey, you know, all right, things are looking, slightly more positive than negative. At the moment, you might still say, hey, this thing could hypothetically roll over. Typically from a statistical standpoint, like what I normally see with these charts, that shouldn't happen here, especially since the broad mentality is bullish. The macro is still bullish. There's still liquidity in the system. Most likely, I think, would be some kind of like stabilization, break this line, maybe get back up here into these upper standard deviation bands, right? The blue bands, take a pullback, right? Collapsing volatility. And then at some point here, maybe later, a week from now, 2 weeks from now, could even be 3 weeks from now, right? After establishing some kind of stabilization, maybe make a break back to the upside here. Or it could break to the downside, right? Because that's really what collapsing volatility tells you. It says, hey, another big move is coming. You're not exactly sure which direction it's going to be, but collapsing volatility tells you that there's like this compressing action like a spring and that the market is going to basically move at some point. You know what? Also, a quick note here, guys. I am watching the YouTube comments today. So if you guys have any questions or want me to look at anything in particular, shout out on the YouTube comments and we'll pull it up. So, okay, that's the Bitcoin price. And, you know, Bitcoin is kind of like a proxy for the rest of what the market is doing. But let's take a little bit more of a look here at Ethereum, because there's some interesting, there's some interesting things that have happened with Ethereum this week. Let's start with their warrant canary. So they removed their warrant canary. And if you don't know what that is, a warrant canary is basically when an open source project, we know that the Fed boys will sometimes try and infiltrate and try and force projects to backdoor their code. It's like the famous Linus Torvalds when he was on stage. This was like, I don't know, like 6 years or seven, 8 years ago now. But someone asked him, they said, hey, have you ever been contacted by a three-letter agency to put a backdoor into the Linux kernel? And he said no as he shook his head yes and smiled. And so everyone laughed. And, you know, it's really probably not really a laughing matter, but his response was pretty funny. Anyways, the point is that a warrant canary says, as a project, as the leader of a project, an open source project, we have never been contacted by a three-letter agency or a government or whatever to produce records or to put a backdoor in our code or any kind of like coercive kind of thing. We've never been hit with a court or to produce information under gag. So when they gag you, it's like, you have to give us this and you're not allowed to tell anyone that that we came to you, right? So they literally censor your speech and tell you you're not allowed to talk about it, which is obviously contrary to just simple basic human rights, but we're dealing with criminals. So a warrant canary is something that you put up and you keep it on your website and you keep it on your website. And if it disappears, people start saying, why didn't they update their warrant canary? It's almost kind of like a dead man switch for having been contacted for the government, because you didn't technically say that we've been contacted. You just failed to update your previous speech, which says that you have not been contacted. There's a lot of debate about whether that is truly will work or not, and whether or not the court can just order you to continue doing your warrant canary. They might run into some kind of like free speech lawsuits if they tried to go that far. Anyways, also on their website, they basically said, we, for a long time, they've been saying that they have continued posting on their, I think it was their repo, you know, their repository. We have not, no governments have made any requests or made any gag orders on us for information. And then they removed that, the Ethereum Foundation removed that recently. So effectively, the speculation, the reporting going on is that the SEC is now issuing, I don't know if it's subpoenas or demands for information. I don't know the correct legal term here, but effectively the government and the SEC has been issuing to a number of different organizations demands for records regarding Ethereum. And the suspicion is, the reporting is, there's, and we're going to talk about this, I'm going to rant about this here in a second, but the reporting is that Ethereum is going to encounter some kind of action from the SEC for being an unregistered security. That's the wrong way to say it, by the way, but that's the news. So the reality, there's like, you could look at this from a number of different layers. The pleb layer says, oh my God, the SEC is going to attack Ethereum because Ethereum is a security, and they're going to shut that shit down. Like, if we're the maximalists, we're like, haha, we told you so. And they're, you know, these maxi status are going to be like, yeah, well, you know, we told you that it was a security and Bitcoin was designed to not be a whatever. Okay. Let's take a step back here. And let's really analyze the totality of the situation. This is going to take a minute, so I apologize, Doug. If this is going too long, you know, just step in there, let me know. It's fine. But I really want you guys to understand what's going to play out here on a number of different levels, what's most likely to play out here. Let's take a step way back. In the beginning was the word. No, I'm just kidding. We're not going to go that far back. We're not going to Putin this shit. Okay, so let's take a step back and understand, what is Howey? What's the Howey test, right? Howey was this orange grove in Florida back, I think it was in the 30s. I probably have that time frame wrong. But Howey was an orange grove where this company, they had an orange grove and they were selling particular orange trees to investors. And this company would tend the trees and they would harvest the oranges and sell them and then return a profit to the investors. This was back in the days like when the SEC was just starting to get, you know, I think they had just been formed or something, the Security and Exchange Commission. And so there was this case over the Howey orange groves, and it went to the Supreme Court. I believe it was the Supreme Court. And what came from that was the Howey test. The Supreme Court said that investors contributed money to a common pool with the expectation of profit from the managerial efforts, solely from the managerial efforts of others, right? They submitted money to a common enterprise with the expectation of profit solely from the managerial efforts of others, specifically the Howey company or whatever. So all of those conditions must be met for something to be an investment contract. So when we say something is a security, really what you're saying is an investment contract was sold. So this company sold investment contracts to people that bought orange trees, but all of the managerial effort was done by this company to return a profit. So the court said that was an investment contract, and thus it is subject to the regulations of the Securities and Exchange Commission. That is a security, as we now call it. Okay, so all of those conditions have to be met. Let's fast forward to the Ripple case that happened. Summary judgment was released on the Ripple case last year, or maybe it was early this year. I think it was last year. Anyways, summary judgment was released, and Judge Torres ruled that XRP tokens themselves are not a security. However, the company, Ripple, did sell investment contracts to the initial investors, right? Those initial investors gave Ripple, the company, money, a common pool, a common enterprise, with the expectation of profits from the managerial efforts of what Ripple would do for the marketing, what they would do for the for their chain, or if you want to call it a chain, for their servers, whatever. And if you think back to Howie, this makes sense, because the orange trees, the oranges in Howie, were not the investment contract. They were the object of that contract, but they were not the investment contract itself. And so Judge Torres, probably what will end up being a landmark ruling for all of crypto, since it was such a major case that went on for so long for one of the largest cryptocurrencies market cap in existence, she said the tokens and a network themselves are not securities, but Ripple did sell investment contracts, right? So in the same way, the Ethereum Foundation did a 60% pre-mine before they launched. They sold 50%, or sorry, they sold out of the 100% of tokens in ETH. They pre-mined 60. They sold 50% of those to the market. They kept 10%, and then the rest of the tokens got mined with proof of work and now proof of stake. Okay, what happened is Ethereum sold investment contracts to the people that bought the pre-mine on Ethereum. Those were investment contracts. However, Ethereum as a network and as a token is not an investment contract. It's not a security. That's that, like, the SEC has absolutely no leg to stand on if they're going to want to say that. Maximalists that don't understand the law have no leg to stand on when they try to say stupid shit like that, because it's just wrong. It's fucking wrong. That is not, like, that's not what the judges and legal people have said, okay? I'm an anarchist. I don't care about regulations, but I do respect the power of the people that have them. So I try to, like, I understand their power. I try to know my enemy. I try to learn about them, right? So I'm putting on my legal hat here. So if you're out there saying that, you know, oh, Bowdy anarchist is not a real anarchist trademark. That's not the case here. It's just that you need to know your enemy. You need to know how they think. You need to understand that system if you're going to play in that system at all, especially if you want to, like, defeat that system. Okay, so that is my rant on ETH. Now, that's the legal level of analysis, okay? What's going to happen most likely with the Ethereum ETF, now that they're filing for it and now that they're being attacked, is something very similar to what happened with the Bitcoin ETF. Because let's be real, Ethereum has massive TradFi bro investment. They have massive, TradFi investment of all kinds of sorts. Like, they've got all kinds of people interested in this, including BlackRock, which we'll get to that hilarious story in a little bit as well. I guess it's going to be ETH heavy today on the price report. Okay, so what's going to happen? What happened with the Bitcoin ETF? They released two ETFs for one, and then they had all this legal fights in between the first ETF and the second ETF, and, like, they had to sue the SEC and, you know, capricious and for acting capriciously. And then ultimately, after the hard fought battle was won, the true Bitcoin spot ETF emerged victorious, and now maximalist laser eyes can ride into the sunset, successfully having integrated their coin into the statist paradigm. Good for them, I guess. And their number went up. Good. So the point of all that is that Gary Gensler spent years at MIT talking good about cryptocurrency, mostly. Although he did mention that a lot of them were securities, but he also specifically said a lot of these are not securities. They don't qualify, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets into the SEC and he's like, they're all basically securities except for, like, I guess, Bitcoin. And now they're going to try and allegedly they're going to try and sue the Ethereum Foundation. And by the way, they are probably going to slice some bacon off the Ethereum Foundation's back. I don't know if there's any bacon to be sliced off of Vitalik's back. He's a pretty thin guy. Anyways, yet I digress. They're probably going to be able to say, hey, you guys sold investment contracts. You owe us money now. And they're going to be like, all right, here's some money. Because they've got billions and billions of dollars. But if they take this to court, the Ethereum is not going to be ruled a security as, like, a network, as a token, but they're probably gonna get their pound of flesh from the Ethereum Foundation. What I'm really getting at here is that there was this whole, like, fake fight that was generated by crypto insiders and Gary Gensler.
they knew what they were doing. They knew exactly that they knew from the beginning they were going to launch two ETFs. They knew they were going to launch a futures-based ETF that wasn't a spot-based ETF. They knew they were going to have these legal battles. They knew they were going to have the double hype cycle. They knew they were going to be able to do this the whole time. Like, can I prove that? No, this is Bowdy Anarchist speculating right here, of course. Obviously, I'm speculating, but this is the reality. Okay, this is what they actually did. And they're probably going to duplicate something similar for Ethereum right here. So just know that. Just know that they're going to duplicate that same playbook for Ethereum. You're going to have these legal fights. You're going to have all the, you know, the battle, and you're going to have the victory at the end, right? So it'll be instructive to see how big the pullback is after the Bitcoin ETF hype dies down a little bit. Today or this week, the past week, we had some of the first major outflows from the broad ETF, Bitcoin ETF ecosystem now. This week was the first like major outflows that we saw, mostly led by Grayscale. Speak about the patent owned by Reggie Middleton. I'm sorry, I can't actually speak to that. I know very little about Reggie Middleton. I know the name. I've forgotten what I had once read about him back in the day. However, you know, if you want to illuminate us, please. Okay, so TXO, UTXO spelled, you know, don't worry. UTXO says, Vitalik is thin because he practices what he preaches. He has been eating their bugs for years. That's hilarious, bro. Okay. I think the Ethereum rant here is basically over. They're just going to double the whole charade that they did, the legal charade and the hype cycle charade. So it'll be instructive to see what happens with the Bitcoin ETF and how far price pulls back. But I mean, you need the thing, right? Like in terms of cryptocurrency, you need the hype. You need to get people in, the believers. Basically milk the laser eyes for about as much as can be milked now. So probably there's going to be this pivot to ETH. Now, in terms of the fact that ETH is being attacked legally speaking, and it seems to be wanting to try to break down this very, very long line. Let's switch to the weekly here. This is a very long line, right? It goes all the way back to 2017. This pleb line right here is flirting with getting broken down. And with the attacks happening, you know, that might actually happen. This line might actually get broken down. It would be amazing, actually, to watch Ethereum versus Bitcoin fall down to this area. That would be just massive, massive buying opportunity. Whether it gets that far, I don't know. But I really just wanted to give you guys the Ethereum rant today on what's happening, because there actually was a decent amount of news on Ethereum. The last of which here, so much news here. The last of which was BlackRock. Anon Mon mentioned this earlier in the comments. He said that that basically BlackRock had launched a hedge fund on Ethereum and has a like an Ethereum token associated with it. They also launched like a stablecoin, I believe. So BlackRock called their Ethereum token the BlackRock USD Institutional Digital Liquidity Fund, or BUIDL, BIDL, for an acronym. It was hilarious because they released this thing, and then they just immediately started getting trolled with like Pepe memes, Tornado Cash outputs, and now like that address is now tainted with Tornado Cash outputs. Some guy registered Big Dick Think. ETH. Larry Fink is the guy that owns BlackRock. So he registered an Ethereum domain name for Big Dick Fink, I guess. Apparently they made like a few hundred thousand, maybe it was even $1 million somehow they got sent, that had nothing to do with BlackRock, just got sent as like trolling shit to their new liquidity fund, or their new hedge fund on Ethereum. That was pretty funny. I think with that, yes. Let's touch here real quick, though, on the Tornado Cash outputs, because now like they got tainted by Tornado Cash. And it's like, well, a company as large as BlackRock is probably going to do some kind of filings with the government. Say, hey, by the way, you know, we got sent some taint. We got sent some taint that stinks onto our contract here. You know, please don't, this is full disclosure. And probably there's some like legal means carved out of making like so that their whole fund is in now like, you know, going to end up in court, or Larry Fink going to jail, right? Like to think that some small amount of taint that you had nothing to do with now for a company that big is actually going to defeat them, and people thinking that chain analysis can be defeated just by tainting other people's addresses. That's it's a bit silly. It's a bit juvenile. That's not really like how the real financial world and the legal work. Okay. I guess that's enough talking about Ethereum on the Monero Talk podcast. Sorry for that deviation there, guys, but that was the big news that happened. Let's see. So we talked about Bitcoin, we talked about Monero, talked about the Ethereum news. We're still looking here at the Bitcoin dominance hovering right just above 50%. I'm still like before calling the fat lady having sung on this recent run up and expecting some major larger pullback. I really want to see altcoins run. I think everybody wants to really see altcoins run before the pullback happens. So that might be a good enough reason for why it doesn't. I can't really, I can't really say that. It's just a note in my mind that I would say, hey, keep that in mind. You know, that might be important. Stocks past week made another little all-time high. That's the NASDAQ. Sorry, let me zoom in here. This is the S&P. So you'll notice actually on a slightly longer time frame, we've got this big channel here with the S&P, kind of touched up here. This what you would call a rising resistance line. But at the same time, if we extend this channel up here, the S&P still has room to run there. So new highs for the S&P, for the NASDAQ. Something I've noticed for the past like 6 months now is that they don't go up together anymore. Like you'll see stocks pump while crypto hangs out or maybe pulls back. And then you'll see crypto pump as the NASDAQ and the S&P kind of cool off a little bit. So they sort of counter pump. Like overall, on the week's long time frame, the month's long time frame, they are going up together. But like in terms of like day to day, it looks like they kind of counter pump, right? One will pump while the other pauses, and the other will pump, while the other one pauses. So that's stocks. We don't need to look any further on that one. We'll just look at some of the macro stuff and be done, call it a day. This is the reverse repos right here. And it looks like, again, it's still kind of like curving down. I think they're going to try and stretch this as long as they can going into the election. That seems like what they're looking at, which would kind of signal a Biden win, right? That's what that would signal. A Biden win means stability. I know that people don't want to hear that, but a Biden win basically means stability for financial markets and probably lower chances of tail risk. Usually they'll do some kind of changing of the guard associated with a big tail risk, right? Like when Biden got into office, that's when Trump had initiated the COVID bullshit. Oh, shit. I can't ever say that fucking word. I'm sorry. I need to put a big note, sticky note on my desk that says, don't say this word. Anyway, so they did all that stuff. And then Biden came in, right? And he's like, well, I'm just fixing the mess. Like they always do that. Oh, I'm just fixing the mess of the last guy, right? So if Biden wins, if the plan is for Biden to win, probably like some level of financial stability should be expected. Gold made another all-time high on Thursday, it looks like, $2,224. Okay, cool. Gold is doing relatively okay now. Really was kind of stuck for a long time while markets were really pumping. But that's just what gold does. Okay, let's see. I don't think there's anything else. We got the Dixie again. Dixie's just kind of hanging out, holding pattern, compressing volatility. Not too important at the moment. Although you'll notice, as Dixie pumps, crypto pulled back a little bit for the past week. Okay. It's not perfectly anti-correlated, but it's slightly anti-correlated. Nothing happened with bonds. It's funny because bonds actually look similar to Dixie in the sense that it's just kind of like this compressing volatility pattern for the past year, maybe year and a half, which is unsurprising, right? Dixie and bonds are definitely, the dollar index and bonds are related to each other. Let's see. Oh, last thing, you know what? There was a Fed meeting that happened. Jay Powell got up there and said some stuff. Nobody cared. Like it was boring, it was droll, there was just nothing important. Something about lowering rates maybe later this year, being data driven, they care about the people and they care about inflation and employment. Nothing important happened with the Jay Powell meeting. They didn't raise rates. He said they're probably done raising rates for the cycle. Rates are steady. And let's take a look at the Monero prices, transaction counts, just because obviously that's the big news in our mind. I don't have the means to analyze this. I really, maybe if I like spent about a month, learning the statistics that I would need to really analyze the Monero transaction counts, but eyeballing this chart, it does look like what's happening here is some kind of a different signature. This like just with your eyeballs, this looks like a different pattern than what we've seen here with this like kind of a sawtooth oscillation for years. I would be interested to see what maybe Ruckneum or some of the other guys that really understand how to analyze this say. I would very much love to see this thing crash down to like 60,000 transactions and do some weird sawtooth action. Because it seems like other cryptos, like that's what happens. You get like weird sawtooth action where you get like spikes of transactions and then no one uses it for a couple days and then everyone uses it again. Like right now, this is high and it's just staying high, right? We're like well above 100,000. So 110, like basically between 130 and 110,000 transactions per day. I feel like if it crashed down, like that would be like, all right, there's no one like attacking the chain, right? No one's trying to like poison outputs or whatever. But if you go high and then you stay high, it's like, I don't know. I don't know what the math is or the statistics. I've heard 9-to-1, like they need to own basically 90% of the outputs to deterministically unwind the chain. But how much can they, like how much does it improve their probabilistic output tracking if they own, say, 1/3 of the outputs or if they own like 70% of the outputs, right? I'm sure that helps. So, yeah, I mean, that's just kind of, we're just looking at the transaction counts. That's like my personal thoughts. There are no conclusions that I draw from that. It's just kind of like me thinking out loud. But at any rate, we're still well above 100,000 transactions. It seems like Monero, the network works just fine. You know, I sent a transaction or two in the past week. So seems like everything's still working there. And with that, I don't think I've got anything else to show you guys today. So let Mr. Pseudo, Mr. Tooman come back on and.
All right.
All right, man. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Tux, any questions? Anything? Anything you got?
Not for me. Just always enjoy listening to Body's take on the market. He's always 10 steps above everyone else in that regard.
Thanks, bro.
Zatto, can you take a look at that one? We talk about that sometimes, and this week it pumped with their upgrade.
I'm writing that down right now because we should start covering Zano. We should like look at the price of Zano every day.
I mean,
every time we do the price report now,
it's super small cap.
Oh, it's a Z.
Oh, of course, MexC and CoinEx. Is that really the only place to trade on? Let's look at CoinEx because MexC are scumbags. All right, we're on the weekly. Let's go to the daily. Yeah, those are gains lately. 50% getting some pullback here. Let's take a look at the Wave Magic. See what the Wave Magic says.
I mean,
we
got
to go down to lower time frames.
So low, right? I mean, it's a very small cap coin.
Yeah, let's put up the volume here too. So Zano currently being $3.85, and then let's pin the move to bring that.
What does that say? Wow, Narrow. Yeah, that Wow Narrow was pumping like crazy. I think because it's getting added to Cake. I don't know if there was other reasons as well.
I'll refrain from sharing my opinion on Wow Narrow.
Yeah.
Hey. I just don't like it. Like, there's already speculative degeneracy. Oh, okay. It might serve some interesting use cases for Monero in the sense that, like, some people
nice
call
test
it a testnet.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah,
we had
it
a testnet.
It's a silly meme coin, but it is funny to me that it still has more usability than, I mean, most coins do because it has all the same privacy features Monero does.
Do they
merge? It's just dangerous. No, I don't think so. Yeah, that would be a nice redeemable feature to have. I don't think
if they merge mine, I could like give them some leeway.
Exactly.
No, I don't believe they do.
Like Monero bros don't need to be dumping on each other speculatively in the Wow Narrow forum. There's so much other degenerative speculative bullshit out there that.
Yeah, that's what I don't like about it. Like you see, like some people like, you know, obviously really jumping on the pump wagon. And then it's always like, oh, it's just a joke. It's just a meme coin. Yeah, but you're misdirecting people. So I don't like to support that, really. That being said, while Narrow will be at Monerotopia, they were there last year, and they'll be here again this year, I think in an even more official capacity. They'll be giving a talk. So
On memes? No, I'm just, it's local.
I don't know. Essentially the founder of Wild Narrow.
Yeah. Yeah, he runs the cryptocurrency trading subreddit. We're good friends.
Yes. Are you being
facetious
there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see if there's more.
I mean, my interactions have always been great. He's I like John.
I'm sure he's a friendly guy.
I don't know what your drama has been over there, but yeah, but I do agree with you. I like, you know, hesitate to give it attention because it gets abused, and you get, you know, it turns into a pump and dump. So much more interested in projects that really kind of give back to the ecosystem in very real ways. I think it's cool that Wow Narrow does implement the tech that Monero is working on faster, you know, because it really doesn't care if things work or not. So as a testnet, I do think that's cool. But you know, people out there that are saying like, Wow Narrow is going to flip Monero, like, I know you're having fun. You're just trying to pump your bags.
Do people actually say that?
Yeah, obviously on Twitter, you know, people see their coin going up, but, you know, everything goes out the window at that point. You know, they just try to pump it. And I just hate to feed into that in any way. I mean, it's just horrible.
I just have a hard, like, WoW is not a meme. I don't see WoW anywhere out there in the Twitter ecosystem except for, like, Monero-related people. So, like, Dogecoin is known by plebs that don't even play in crypto. WoW is not, like, this meme, like, this dog meme that draws people in, at least not from what I can see. Like, maybe I'm obviously no one can see the entire market at once, but I just don't see any reason to think that the WoW meme brings people into Monero. It seems mostly to be meme, like the niche meme market people and Monero people.
Right. It's just bringing in Monero people to WoW. Right. Like it's like that's a very good point. And then they're just going to dump it and get more Monero. So be careful. Be careful. Don't be on the side of the dump, guys.
So looking at the Xano chart here, this is on MEXC, and then the situation seems to be about the same on CoinEx, which are the only two exchanges I saw here. They're trading about $30,000 to $100,000 a day on each exchange. So that's, and $100,000 would be like your max. So it's trading about $30,000 to $50,000 of total volume per day. That's really, really low. That's very, very low liquidity volume. However, people should like when you say, oh, it's low liquidity, that's just a low liquidity shitcoin. Okay. Understand that. When Bitcoin was at its lowest liquidity, it had its highest price gains. Because when there is no liquidity and people suddenly decide, I want to buy this thing, the price goes vertical, right? Because something has to give. And when there's no liquidity, the only thing they can give is price. So your highest potential for gains are when the liquidity is the lowest, particularly when the sell side liquidity is the lowest, to be as specific as possible. But anyways, yeah, I mean, you could pick up some Xano here. Maybe I made a mental note and a real note to at some point here, I think it's probably worth a punt, right? It's worth to pick up some Xano, probably worth it to pick up some DarkFi hasn't launched anything yet, right? So, but whenever DarkFi does launch, I mean, probably just best to mine it, right? They're going to merge mine with Monero. So, let's see. Someone asked about Darrow. Yeah, Darrow actually did perform, recently. Let's take a look at CoinEx, I guess. Darrow volumes are, hang on, gotta move the volume ticker down. All right. So Darrow volumes look to be about five times. Wow, those are low volumes but that's CoinEx. There's got to be better volume somewhere else. All right. Well, let's just forget about volume for a moment and just take a look at the price. Yeah, Darrow had a nice pump here. Pumped to the up to its upper standard deviation limits. That's about 2.5x that it made. Yeah, I mean, it was probably due, right? Like at some point, I think someone asked about it like a few months ago and I said, hey, you know, who knows, right? Unless you really know. Or are in the know. But I mean, you know, I mean, all shitcoins have been pumping lately. Like Bitcoin set new all-time highs. It is the time to expect various coins to pump. We talked about Darrow a number of times here and why we're kind of suspicious and we don't really. But, you know, I mean, they'll be at Monerotopia, as you said. Will they be
printing? Well, no, I don't know. I mean, if Darrow wants to reach out to us, you know, if they want to participate in Monerotopia and be a privacy tech sponsor, I mean, we have WoW Nero. Why wouldn't we have Darrow, right? And my understanding is they are doing some interesting things with tech. I really don't know the project at all. But yeah, you know, given the nature of Monerotopia, we're open to projects coming, and then we benefit because they contribute, right? So that's what keeps the conference super cheap. That's what allows us to have a budget to fly in speakers from all over the world. So if they want to come contribute, purchase a sponsorship as a privacy tech project would certainly be open to that, but that's up to them.
Florida asks, can anyone speak to its utility? How does it compete with Monero? What does Darrow have that XMR does not? Basically, Darrow's claim to fame is homomorphic encryption, right, where you can perform mathematical operations on some encrypted data. It's kind of like how on Monero you can prove that the sum of the inputs and the outputs equals zero without revealing the actual amounts there. But homomorphic encryption is like more complete in the sense that you can do like a more complete mathematical operation on encrypted data. There's the thing is, and I don't know enough about it because I really haven't looked into Darrow that much, but guys like Seth for Privacy and I think some other guys have really challenged the level of what Darrow can actually do in terms of homomorphic encryption. Obviously, their developer, and I say their developer singular on purpose, they would challenge that. It did seem like they had made some questionable decisions, like when Monero was pioneering bulletproofs. Before the math audit was complete, Darrow integrated them into their chain, which is like, that's a huge no-no. Like, you don't integrate unaudited math into your running chain. Like, that's just wait the few months, right? Just wait a few months until it's done, and then integrate it. But yeah, I mean, hey, it does some stuff. Okay, maybe it'll do some stuff for real. I don't know. I'm more interested in DarkFi. I really enjoy the way they approach. And again, guys, like I've said this before, but like, I'm not a developer. I'm not a cryptographer. So what am I going to do? How am I going to make decisions about fucking chains that are super advanced? Well, I'm going to have to rely on those social cues. I'm going to have to rely on the sort of peripherally associated things and the way that people conduct themselves, right? So yes, this is, are you nice? Do you play nice monkey with other monkeys? Okay. But also things like, do you integrate math operations into your chain before the math audit is done? That's a red flag. That's like, yo, like, no, that you shouldn't do that. And I have to look at, you know, all of the other sort of surrounding stuff. If I'm not going to evaluate that encryption and that code and chain for myself, it's like a poor man's way. It's a pleb man's way of trying to understand topics for which you're not like sufficiently educated on, or perhaps you don't have sufficiently enough wrinkles on the exterior of your brain to be able to assess. But anyways, so like that's one way that I think is, you know, that you can go about looking at things. I would caution against being careful. Like, a lot of very smart people are kind of rough around the edges, you know, like we have them in Monero too. Like, some really cool people that made some really cool shit for the chain are a little bit rough around the edges. So like, I don't necessarily take the social cues nearly as much as I take like their best practices cues, right? If they fail to implement and meet like certain best practices, that raises red flags, like in a more technical sense. Yeah, that's my rant on pleb level decisions.
Yeah, like Monero and all the, you know, super low cap, these things turn into pump and dumps. The original question was, how about Darrow? That's getting some buzz from Jeff Berwick and Raphael. You know, Jeff Berwick and Raphael, great guys, but they're kind of infamous for being part of these projects that get pumped and that then dump. We saw it with Pirate Chain. I mean, guys, I think anybody that listens to this show is aware of these general concepts, right? You know, investigate these projects, see if they have, you know, strong teams behind them. I mean, how many people are developing on Pirate Chain? It's like one guy. Is it even happening anymore? Is it even being developed anymore? It completely pumped, completely dumped, and a lot of people lost a lot of money that got turned onto it. Darrow, you know, is that the next pump and dump from the, you know, from Berwick? I don't know. You know, I'd be cautious. I'd be cautious there. You know, make sure you're not buying somebody else's bags, and then you're you know, you're on the dump side. That's my overall take on those projects. So,
if I wanted to be as gracious as I could, I do regard, broadly speaking, Anarchapulco, Berwick, Raphael. These guys are allies, right? Like, they
100%.
Play with Monero. Like, if you're here in Mexico and you want to send these guys Monero, they'll be like, sure, no problem. Like, it's like a no-brainer for them. And you also have to understand that as you get more popular, you start to influence the market. So, like, you know, we're kind of like a somewhat small show here, and probably not that many people listen to my price advice. But hypothetically, if I had 100,000 followers and I started recommending low-cap coins that could pump, and I genuinely was like, yeah, you know, this coin or whatever, right? Like, I won't say any particular coins, but yeah, some low cap coin that I got into early, and I genuinely believe it's going to go up. Well, if I've got 100,000 followers, I can sort of make that happen, even if just by accident. So, like that is like a problem that you run into.
Yeah, but they are aware of it, right? The crypto vigilante, and they're very much aware of it. You know, I like them too. I enjoy going. I was down in Anarchapulco years ago. Jeff Berwick closed out Monerotopia last year. I mean, the guy, you know, is a visionary in terms of liberty. He was very early in Bitcoin. He says a lot of great things. Raphael helped, you know, big part of Monerotopia in years past. Great guy. But they also happen to then, you know, be the guys that like often talk about these small cap cryptos that get pumped and dumped. We saw it with Pirate Chain. We've seen it. BSV, wasn't it? Like, BSV, like, why were they so big on BSV, right? Like, so
Raphael is a big BSV guy.
Yeah, so, you know, that, you know, that That's what I'm saying. So be very careful. Are they into Monero? Of course they're into Monero because they would have no credibility at that point. And they're into traditional Bitcoin as well. So
yeah, well said.
So we'll leave it at that. And I hope they do participate this year. I'm sure Raphael would come down, and he was a speaker last year. The year before, they helped out they ran the virtual conference part of the conference. So we've known Raphael for years, and he is great. But just be wary of, you know, what gets pushed out there. You don't want to be on the wrong side of a pump and dump.
Damn, I'm looking at Pirate Chain here. This is a round tripper. This is what you call a round tripper. The thing went from 17 cents up to like $20. What was that? Yeah, right around 20. And it basically went all the way back down. Like, it round tripped all the fuck way back down to its lowest point. Hex is another one of these coins that did the same thing.
I mean, that's the purest like example of a pump and dump, is it not?
Yeah. And, you know, if you're, you know, at an Acapulco over here, you know, maybe you were buying it when they were telling you to buy it, and maybe that's when they were selling it.
And this is what a 90% not pre-mine trademark registered, not pre-mine gets you. You know, like, hey, I know, let's not tell the Monero community, let's not talk to the privacy community, let's launch a chain based on proof of work, for which we run basically all of that proof of work for a couple of years, and then be like, hey, we really like you guys. Monero's awesome. Also, buy Pirate. Like, okay, but why didn't you talk to us when you launched?
Right.
Secret mine? Not secret. I mean, they still published things. Like, it was still out there in the ether and the internet, right? But, yeah, I mean, that's what happens. Like, when you get such highly centralized supply, unless you're very, very careful to manage it or get massive attention, like Ripple did. You know, they pre-mined 100%, but they had massive, massive attention for the entire ecosystem and really, really good narratives. We're the banker coin, right? This is the coin that we made for the banks are going to adopt it. That was never true. There was never real, like, actual banking partnerships. Not like big banks. Like, okay, some, like, nothing bank in some random country, maybe, but anyways, Ripple did a really good job with their marketing and with, you know, capturing the pleb attention. And so their 100% pre-mine was able to actually perform really good and actually stay really high and be a top market cap coin. Pirate Chain, not so much.
All right. I think we covered a lot here with the price report. Baudi, as always, man, fantastic job. But yeah, let's keep it moving. We're already 2 hours in. We got our guests waiting. We got to make this
next week.
All right. Cheers, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Baudi. Always appreciate it.
Tops. All right. Let's get our guest up.
Moving on.
The Monerotopia guest segment is sponsored by CakeWallet, an exchange of Monero and Bitcoin and iOS. CakeWallet is always...
Hello, hello. Tony, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Looks like you're working on a pretty interesting project here. Crypto Talks, I believe it's called.
That's right. CryptoTalks.ai.
Where you can pay for AI with Monero. I was actually personally interested in this idea when I kind of first got caught up in the ChatGPT craze, and I was talking to somebody trying to perhaps build something, and looks like you went ahead and did it. I saw Nano did something similar, and I think they've been making some strides with that, and now you went ahead and built a version for Monero, or perhaps it's something else. Explain to us, what is Crypto Talks?
Yeah, so, I mean, you pretty much nailed it. It's just a way for you to pay for AI services with cryptocurrency. So I'm not specific to Monero. I'm not like a Monero developer myself. You guys seem to be, I mean, a really tight community. So I posted on the Monero subreddit, and you know, everybody's jumping all over it, seemed like. So that was nice. That's a nice welcome. But yeah, I mean, this is just a way to access AI if you're not part of the traditional financials.
And so why, you said you're not really kind of a Monero guy first and foremost, so why Monero? Why did you choose Monero for this project?
Well, I mean, it was pretty easy to set up. I mean, I'm using Bitcoin Pay Server, which is, it's not just Bitcoin, but it's an open source payment server for crypto. So that's how I built this thing pretty much. Monero is pretty easy to integrate. But I also see the value in it. You know, obviously, privacy is important to a lot of people. Censorship resistance is important to a lot of people. And especially in terms of AI, like censorship is a huge, you know, discussion point in the AI, field. So like having something like Monero to access AI, I think is super important because, you know, with search, it's similar, you know, with Google search, you know, they're selling your data. That's you know, how they make money. You know, maybe this can be something like the DuckDuckGo to like a Google search for AI.
And get into a little bit more of like the nitty gritty of how it works. So it's using the ChatGPT or OpenAI or something?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot of different models you can access through CryptoTalks. So ChatGPT is one of them. Claude is another big important one. So those are, you have the closed source models and you have the open source models too. So there's a number, there's like 150 or so open source models that you can access through CryptoTalks. Some of them are like uncensored and like unaligned, meaning that, you know, for a lot of these like closed source models, they're very like designed to be like safe. So you can't ask like bad questions. It's not going to answer them. It's going to say, you know, sorry, but ethically, you know, I can't help you with that or whatever. There are some models here where, you know, it's not as designed to be so, you know, nice and polite. And you can access those. You can see them if you open up the docs, you can see which models there are, if anybody's curious.
Can you demo it for us? Can you show us this thing working in action?
Yeah, I guess. Let me see here.
Yeah, you can share your screen with the present button at the bottom. I can pull it up.
Let's see here.
So really, in sum, it's a way for people to access the power of ChatGPT anonymously and paying for it with Monero, effectively.
Exactly. So I'm going to have to, let's see here. Let me just close all my like.
But like you said, I mean, for those, you know, there's only really so much you can do with ChatGPT. It is controlled. You know, I'm sure everybody who's listening to this has put prompts into ChatGPT where it's refusing to give you a response because of the content. So it's not solving that problem. But at least this allows you to access ChatGPT in an anonymous way, so you don't have to worry as much about your data being collected as you interact with it.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys can see my screen. So I built this tool really for developers. At least that's how I started. So I'm a developer myself, and I want to be able to access all these models with. And so right now, well, that you're going to access like a Python script or like the command line. So here is like kind of an example of how you might use it. So you're gonna send a post request here to talk to AI.
Tony, by the way, your sound just got a little shittier. I don't know what happened. You were doing good 2 seconds ago, 2 minutes ago. Just a heads up.
Here.
I think you like moved abruptly or something. I'm not sure. It's okay.
It's okay.
Maybe you just moved away from the mic or something.
Is that any better?
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, okay. I mean, if it's too bad, I can try to reset it or something. But
this sounds okay.
Okay. Yeah, so this is basically how it works. I mean, and you can imagine how, you know, you might use this as a developer. I'm going to revoke this token, so if anybody's watching, don't try it.
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, this is an OpenAI, like, API-compatible service. So, like how I show in the landing page, you can just use the OpenAI client with your CryptoTalks API key to access these models here. And so you might do something like, you know, sending a message here to OpenAI GPT-4, you know, and it's going to give you the response as long as you have a valid CryptoTalks key and you're pointing at the right place. That's pretty much how it works. Yeah.
So you haven't really built like a GUI for it, a way for people to easily interact and get that feel like they're using ChatGPT.
Yes.
But with Monero.
Yeah, exactly. So it's on my roadmap. Here, I'll just share like the landing page here. So like, yeah, this is pretty much how I expect people to use it here, like through the OpenAI client. I definitely want to have like a user interface where people can actually like, you know, talk to like GPT-4 or something like that. That's on the roadmap. You know, I'm just one guy. I'm just sort of doing this in my spare time. So if anybody wants to, you know, help me do that, I will totally, you know, merge your PRs if you want to do that. But yeah, I mean, right now this is still very experimental. I'm not even sure, you know, if this is going to have legs. Is this going to be a long-term project or not? Maybe, maybe not. But yeah, this is hopefully something interesting at least to this community.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have some people who are just negative on AI overall, seeing the, you know, the dystopian potential effects that we could all very easily dream of, right? Part of me is that as well, but the fact is AI is certainly here to stay. So I think the goal should be to be how do we create a version of it where we can interact with it anonymously and in a way where it's not gaining all our data and, you know, learning too much about us, and where we get the benefits of AI without AI becoming a, you know, unstoppable force that can control humanity, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a technology, and like, technology is always going to cut two ways. Like, you can use it for good, you can use it for bad. The same is true for, you know, cryptocurrency, Monero, anything you can think of, a knife, you know, you can cut your tomatoes, you could cut someone's throat. Like, whether somebody uses technology for good or bad, it's not up to the technology. It's not up to the developers, really, especially for open source. So, yeah, I mean, is AI going to bring about like a dystopian future? I hope not, and I hope the way to prevent that is open source. You know, obviously, you guys understand that. And privacy is also super important. The ability to access technology in a private way, not have your data just going everywhere so people, like big companies, can swallow it up and use it against you. You guys know that better than anybody else, I think, this community. So I think the combination of crypto and AI has some ways to sort of fight against this sort of potential dystopian future where everything is owned by, you know, Facebook and Google and whatever, and they just control our lives through AI. I think we can prevent that.
Do you have some kind of, you know, like long-term vision of where you're seeing this going?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about this a lot, and, you know, one thing I'm thinking about is that, you know, it's cool that you can, you know, pay crypto to have an AI do something, but I think like reversing that would be even cooler. Like if you could have an AI use crypto to do something for you as like a sort of like tool that it can use, that could really give it a lot more agency in the real world. And, you know, we're not there yet with the AIs. They are not smart enough to do something like that. You know, I certainly wouldn't trust GPT-4 to like make payments on my behalf, but I could see, you know, in a year or 5 years or something like that, like that could definitely happen. You know, maybe, you know, for example, you have like, you have your little assistant app and you say like, I want to, you know, renovate my porch, you know, and it goes out and does a little bit of research, contacts a few contractors or something, and maybe gives you a little feedback, say, here's what I did, you know, pick A, B, or C, pick A, and then it sends payments and organizes everybody on a calendar or something like that. I could totally see that being a future, and I could definitely see crypto payments being part of that. That is definitely, you know, one of the more like further out ideas. I think just for now, in the next like couple months, couple weeks, I'm definitely going to just be focused on like getting this to work, paying for crypto or paying for AI using crypto, getting that to work really well, having a, you know, friendly user interface, so it's not just like us typing in a command line just to, you know, get some output or something like that.
I mean, that's kind of potentially the scary use case, though, right? I mean, if we have an AI, a general purpose AI that's now also has the ability to go out and make payments on its own, what will it start making payments for and start doing on its own, right? Now you've given it the ability to fund itself.
I mean, sure, I can understand the fear that like AI is going to like break away from human control and like have its own goals and have its own things. I think that is very much a science fiction idea. Mm-hmm. Because for the simple reason that AI is created by humans. We design exactly how it behaves. We don't understand maybe fully everything, how it works like on the inside, but we provide the data, you know, that it's trained on. So we can dictate the behavior that it generates. So an AI is, I don't think an AI is ever going to have its own sort of like goals and try to like, you know, overthrow humans. I don't really see that. I mean, it's a tool like any other. And I mean, tools can be very powerful, and tools can do a lot of like amazing things, but I don't think they're going to go out there and like exist in some cyberspace, you know, sure, sir. I don't know what they would even want to do, but yeah, I'm not worried about that future. I'm much more worried about a future where people use AI in like evil ways. That's a more scary future to me. And I think that's a much more realistic, like short-term thing to worry about, rather than, you know, worrying about what the AI itself is going
to
do.
But to that end, you know, how do we define scary ways? Does that just lead to a scenario where we're putting out these AI models that are controlled by governments so that we don't use them for nefarious purposes? And they define what those nefarious ways are. They use their political thoughts and ideology and embed that into the AI models. That's kind of what the Florida's getting out here. Tony, if I were you, I'd only promote AI models that use truth as its basis. Obviously, what is truth? Nobody knows, right? It's always going to have some human influence. Who's ever the creator of the model itself will be determining what truth is. I mean, unless there's some novel way to that I can't comprehend to have AI be more truthful. But yeah, what's your response to all that? Like I said, with ChatGPT, we're clearly seeing the influence of humans in terms of the models themselves and what you are and are not allowed to use it for.
Yeah, well, we already live in a world where there are big companies that control what an AI will and will not say. That is right now. So if you go on ChatGPT or whatever and you ask it, like, you ask it a spicy question, or you ask it something like, explicitly like dangerous, like how do I make a bomb? It's going to tell you, no, I can't do that. But even if you ask something like, you know, maybe a little bit like political, or you ask it to make me a picture of Donald Trump or something, it's not going to do that. I mean, obviously open source models are how we maintain like, you know, control over our own technology, like just sharing it publicly. But there is a sort of like financial sort of problem there because the AIs do take a lot of money to train. And so there has to be some sort of return on investment for these companies, or they're not going to train them in the first place. But no, I think this is where open source data comes in, open source architectures. Yeah, I mean, what is truth? Like Florida said, like promoting AI models that use truth as its basis. Like everybody, I mean, we live in a post-truth world. Like we cannot even agree what the facts are anymore. Like, because the media has at this point come out and tried to, they have their own, you know, incentives, agendas, and they are trying to convince people that this and that is not true. So, unfortunately, that is the world we're living in. I mean, I think that a lot of the models these days do a fairly good job of balancing, you know, what is like the consensus, if you can call it that, and promoting that in the outputs. And, you know, GPT-4 and Claude and all these models can give you some pretty nuanced answers about some pretty spicy topics. There's no perfect answer here.
Mm-hmm. How does this differ or compare to what we saw with the Nano chatbot?
I'm not super familiar with Nano. If you could give me a little context. I mean, is this like another privacy coin? Something like that?
They're not a privacy coin. It's a cryptocurrency I think it has no fees when you send it. It's an interesting project. It's been along for a long time. Somebody in the space built an app that allows you to basically interact with ChatGPT, but like you, but I guess paying for the tokens as you did it. Just curious, but I guess you haven't really taken a good look at it. I think it's perhaps maybe just a more refined user interface at this point.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's totally expected. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of user interfaces for these chatbots too. I mean, I'll get there eventually. I mean, I know it's pretty hard to use it if you're not a developer right now. I'm working on it. I hope to make this a much more usable platform. Yeah.
I think it's super cool that you've went with Monero. I'm certainly happy about that. Were you considering other coins to use for this project?
Well, look, I mean, I want to add coins that are useful. Personally, I find that a lot of coins are just not useful, and they're just sort of speculative instruments for people to try to make money. I think we all know that. Monero's obviously got a tight community. It's got a lot of users and people that actually spend the coin. Like, I advertised CryptoTalks in the Bitcoin subreddit. Nobody cared. Because nobody's using Bitcoin like for payment. Maybe if I do like Bitcoin Lightning, maybe people would actually use it, but I don't know. Like, people, and the reason I'm on this podcast is because like people are actually using Monero. I posted in the Monero subreddit. People signed up. People started using it, making deposits in Monero. So I was excited to see that. But yeah, I mean, I added Monero because I think it's useful.
Very cool. That's great to hear on our end. You know, nice to see that Monero is attracting people that want to develop crypto-based projects because it's known as a community where people actually use the crypto.
Yeah.
Tux, you got any comments on this?
No, I think it's a cool project. And I mean, yeah, I know that most of these AI models that you're paying for, a lot of them are controlled and, you know, heavily censored themselves. But I think it's still cool that now you can actually use these things because they are useful for, like, they're like really massive and very specific search engines. So they are useful for learning lots of little quick things here and there. And I think it's great that you can just pay XMR for that, because if you try to pay for most of these AI stuff, like normally through their own websites, you have to use a credit card, you have to give them like some of your information, all that stuff. So I think this is a really great project that allows people to use this in a more private way.
Yeah. And the reason I, you know, got into crypto in the first place was just because, like, I see that there's plenty of people that do not have access to the traditional financial system. And so they also don't have access to AI. AI is absolutely a revolution. I mean, all of the web technologies, you know, like crypto and like AI that are a result of the internet, these are all things that like everybody should have access. And if they don't have access, they're going to get left behind. And so I definitely think that, you know, having the ability to use crypto to pay for AI is important, so that, you know, a student in Venezuela who has $5 in their, you know, Monero wallet can actually use, you know, AI, or somebody in China that's trying to learn about what happened in Tiananmen Square can ask ChatGPT, you know, through something like CryptoTalks, you know, those sorts of questions, because that's not something you can do, you know, inside like a Chinese, you know, network.
Very cool. Very cool, man. Do you want to put out the information again? So like maybe somebody is watching, listening, thinking they'd like to help out, make a user interface for it.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get in touch with me, my Twitter is TonyD993. Send me a message. I'm also on GitHub, TonyDavis629. If you go to CryptoTalks.ai, I got my email at the contact that's right up top. Totally open to working with people. This is, you know, a passion project. This is not like not a VC funded, you know, crypto mixer or whatever you guys are talking about. So we're not going to have any of that drama here. I'm not like trying to like, you know, promote some, trying to like make a lot of money, whatever. This is just, I'm building something, putting it out there, you know, getting it picked up by communities like yours. Happy to talk about it. Happy to work with people.
What is the business model? So like, you know, I guess, pay so much for the tokens for API access, and then you get a little bit more for selling the tokens.
Yeah. I just put a 10% fee on top of the, you know, cheapest fees that I could find out there. So yeah, you are paying a little bit of a premium here. I wish there was a better way to do that. Like, I wish I didn't have to be the middleman here. I wish there was a way that like you could just send a crypto payment and then that turns into like a credit card. I mean, I know there's like the crypto debit cards out there. I don't think that's like the perfect system. I don't think that's the perfect way to do this. I mean, obviously the ideal way is to just pay, you know, the actual person hosting these AIs, like in Bitcoin. That would be ideal. But, you know, I'm not hosting these AIs myself. They are not running on my computer. So I have to send your request out to whoever the provider is. So I have to make that payment with a credit card. So, yeah, I do take a fee. I do wish that there was a better way to do that, though.
So like a more long-term version of this idea, or perhaps next step would be like, you know, you're running your own servers, your own ChatGPT, or I guess your own just open AI servers, and then people are accessing it that way. Or perhaps I guess the most ideal is people are running their own AI server, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the most private way to use AI is to host it on your own computer. That's pretty much out of the question for a lot of people. Maybe not the US. I mean, if you have a regular GPU, you know, even like 10 gigabytes of RAM is like pretty decent. I mean, that's still going to be like a couple hundred dollars, like at least $500, $600 just to like run even the most basic chatbots, which are also not very good. But yeah, I mean, that would be the gold standard for privacy. Nobody's going to be able to see that. Yeah, I mean, there's actually a lot of different ideas, I think, for like sharing this sort of AI capabilities and in a private way. Actually, you guys were talking about it earlier, homomorphic encryption. There is a lot of research that goes into like using homomorphic encryption to encrypt the inputs to AI models. So you could have like, you know, you send your encrypted message to this AI model. It produces some sort of encrypted output and then you decrypt it. And at no point does the model actually know what it's like doing. So that is certainly, I think, one avenue of research that needs to be investigated more to further enhance privacy. Because right now, if you send a message to me on CryptoTalks, you know, as a service, I have to send that message to whoever the provider is. So they're going to be able to see those messages. They might not know who you are. You do have a sort of pseudo anonymity, but your messages are still going to be plain text. I don't think anybody's figured out how to like do that yet, but that would be very interesting if there's any cryptographers that sort of want to help out with that. I think it would be a very fruitful endeavor.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Thank you, man. Thanks for jumping on today. I hope you keep at it. I hope people reach out to you and help you out with the project. And feel free to jump on another, you know, a future date. Give us an update. Hope it keeps progressing.
For sure, man. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. You guys have been like the most receptive community I've ever seen. Like usually I'll post something on social media and people just will trash it, you know, but Monero seem to be, you guys seem to be happy that people are actually using it. So I applaud you, this podcast and the community for that.
Fantastic, man. I'll just bring it up one more time so people can see it. CryptoTalks. It's CryptoTalks.ai, right? Yeah.
That is correct, yeah.
CryptoTalks.ai.
Should be in the description.
Yep.
Yes. All right, very cool. Yes, stick around if you'd like to. For the show, we'll have viewers on stage at some point. If you want to stick around, people could come up and ask you more questions. If you got to go, we understand that as well. And like I said, yeah. you could stop by again in the future. Thank you so much, man.
For sure, man. Thanks. I'll see you all around.
Good to meet Cheers. You, Kelly. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. All right.
That was all right. That was very cool.
And always good to hear how receptive the Monero community is for people that are working on projects that involves, you know, where they actually want people to use crypto to send it, to use it as digital cash. So
yep,
we're doing good in that sector, guys. We are the community that is known for that. Let's keep it that way and let's keep growing to that end. What do we got next? Are we gonna do news?
All right, yep, we got news coming right up.
Let's do it.
And now for our weekly news segment.
Hey guys, happy weekend.
Hello, Cody.
Tony.
How are you guys?
Good, man. Good. How you doing?
Good. It's kind of nice to see a lot of Tonys in the Monero community. We have Tony very well in a couple of comments. So Tony's going strong. And then it's kind of funny how we have Florida in the comments and I'm Tony and then I'm also in Florida. Well, it was funny.
Monero is fungible, but the Tonys are not. Each one is unique in their own right. That's for sure.
Okay, let me share my screen. Yeah, the ring signature is just a bunch of Tonys. Right now, 16 Tonys. Okay, guys, so we have a lot of interesting stuff for this week. And the first one that we're going to discuss is the EU cash cap and ban on anonymous crypto payments results in financial paternalism. So the majority of the EU Parliament's lead committees today approved far-reaching new anti-money laundering laws. And it's never been about anti-money laundering laws, but just a control. But anonymous cash payments over 3,000 euro will be banned in commercial transactions. Cash payments over 10,000 euro will even be completely banned in business transactions. And anonymous payments in cryptocurrencies to wallets operated by providers, hosted wallets will be prohibited even for a minimum amounts without a threshold.
That's crazy. First of all, did this legislation actually pass, or it was just, I'm not totally clear on that. I don't know if anybody really understands what's going on over there in the EU Parliament. I don't think the majority of the EU Parliament led committee today approved, this anti-money laundering law, but I don't know if it generally passed in the full parliament. I'm not exactly sure. But yeah, the implications are crazy, right? So they're basically outlawing the use of anonymous crypto payments when they're made to a hosted wallet. So like if you send it would then be illegal to, right, effectively, if you were to send Monero to an exchange, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't say it's illegal to send it peer-to-peer to unhosted wallets, but sending it to any hosted wallet would be illegal for any amount,
mm-hmm.
No threshold. And then they're also actually going after physical cash as well, putting additional restrictions on the use of physical cash as well. Yeah, guys. Get Monero. I don't know what to say. I mean, we saw it all coming, but it's freaking ramping up, and it's ramping up fast. How would they enforce this? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, from the end of the hosted wallet side, I guess these companies are going to follow it, right?
Yep.
They're going to follow the regulations, because that's what big companies do. They work with the regulators.
They do. They have no choice unless they want to be shut down. But the interesting thing is that will this law actually have a huge effect on crime? And it's actually not going to have a huge effect on crime. And then is this something what the people wanted? It is not what the people wanted, because there was a great public outcry when the commission asked for the public for their opinion on limiting cash payments in 2017. Not surprisingly, more than 90% of responding citizens spoke out against such a step. Respondents considering payment anonymously in cash essential personal freedom, and other restrictions on payments and cash are ineffective in achieving the potential objectives, fight against criminal activities, terrorism, tax evasion, which these first two are definitely stuff that we don't want. This one we can discuss, tax evasion. And according to an ECB survey, up to 10% of citizens use cash even for amounts greater than 10,000 euro buying cars. So actually not a lot of people use, especially on a day-to-day basis, over 10,000 euro for a transaction. So this is for sure something that people did not want, and it's just war against cash, war against freedom, so that they put it on the CBDC, and so that they can control everything. And as we talked in the past, they want to control where you go, what you eat, and they can do that if they have you on a CBDC system. So it's never about empty money laundering and protecting you against criminal activity and terrorism, because they fund it anyway. They're the ones that start most of the wars. So, yeah, interesting. And I guess it's been approved. I'm not sure if it's actually passed, because we did talk about this in the past multiple times. But yeah, it's something that is not that clear.
Yeah, we'll keep following it, and maybe we could have an expert on that's intimately familiar with this. Maybe somebody from the Pirate Party in Europe. We've been trying to get that guy on. I think he was on a while ago. I'm sure he'd be intermittently familiar with all this. And it's a war on cash. It's a war on cash. And I do think this is the thing that could open up noobs' eyes to the importance of Monero, because they could very much understand the war on cash part. They know that cash has always been a part of their society, and now they see their government attacking it and essentially banning the use of it. And I think that's a way to open up people's eyes to the larger problem and the need for a digital version of cash. So when cash no longer exists in the physical, we're going to need a replacement for it in the digital realm, and that's where Monero comes in. So I do think it's, you know, there's a silver lining there in terms of it's helping the noobs realize the importance of something like Monero, because cash will no longer exist in the physical realm.
Well, and I kind of have a funny story in the 10,000 euro cap. So one time I had to go from America to Europe, and I had to bring over 10,000 just to give to people. And my mom was like, "Hey, we should put it in envelopes." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a horrible idea." And kids, they checked me, and we just wrapped it in a bunch of Christmas stuff so that it looks like my gifts. Because if they do catch you bringing from America to Europe with over 10,000, they're going to ask you a bunch of questions. Why do you have so much cash? Why do you? Now, let's talk about the next thing, which is interesting. Is Monero stronger than Bitcoin because holders spend it? So this is going to be a very interesting post to discuss. The former CEO of BitMEX, Arthur Hayes, previously opined that a spot Bitcoin ETF could completely destroy Bitcoin if they're too successful. According to Hayes, Bitcoin ETF issues holding all the Bitcoin would negatively impact the number of transactions, of course, on the Bitcoin network, and miners will lose any incentive to keep validating transactions. The end result is miners turn off their machines as they can no longer pay for the energy required to run them, said Hayes. Without the miners, the network dies, and Bitcoin vanishes, which is an interesting proposition. Also, another proposition is that eventually, when there's not going to be any more Bitcoin rewards, when we're going to cap on the 21 million, which is, you know, it's going to happen not in the foreseeable future, what's going to happen then? How are miners going to be incentivized to mine after that when there's not going to be any Bitcoin rewards and they're just going to have to pay their energy expenditure using the fees? And if nobody's really using it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the problem with the whole Bitcoin is digital gold meme. If it's digital gold that people are just storing and nobody's sending it, the network just will cease to function. It just won't work anymore. You need the incentives for miners to mine and secure the network. And now that everybody's basically purchasing their Bitcoin through ETFs where they don't actually hold the Bitcoin, and all the Bitcoin are just being held by essentially Coinbase, actually, because I think that was news that came out this week too. I don't know if you have it here, but Coinbase is the company that's holding most of the crypto for these ETFs. It's just all sitting there, and nobody's actually trading, moving Bitcoin on chain anymore. Then, yeah, the whole system break. The whole system will cease to function as intended.
Yeah. So actually, that's a good segue to go into. This post from Bitcoin Magazine. So the Coinbase CEO says they're the custodian for 90% of the U.S. spot Bitcoin ETF assets, which is a large percentage.
And
this is just the beginning as well. So let's go ahead and play this video. And so almost 3 minutes.
Crypto outside of even just being a store of value here, as many people see it as they're entering this asset class, some for the first time with the advent of these spot Bitcoin ETFs, it begs the question, how do you see the future of Coinbase? There are a lot of questions about the future of crypto exchanges in the world where Bitcoin ETFs have gotten so much share. Do you see Coinbase going far and above beyond being simply a crypto exchange?
Yeah. So with the ETFs that got approved, we've seen a huge influx of capital into the system. About $12 billion of inflow have happened. And, you know, when that happens, sometimes people ask us, well, what does that mean for Coinbase? Well, you know, it's actually incredibly positive for Coinbase. We're the custodian for about 90% of the assets in those Bitcoin ETFs. And so we have monetization opportunities there as a custodian, but it didn't cannibalize any of the opportunity in our direct products too, our retail app or institutional product. We actually saw increased inflows there while we saw $12 billion of inflow into the ETFs. So the ETFs were incredibly positive for the industry. They were a regulatory approval. They unlocked new pools of capital. And Coinbase is going to be not just a place where you store crypto, it's a place where you can actually trade crypto. You can use it increasingly in many different applications all over the world. And it's not just Bitcoin either. You know, we support over 100 different crypto assets. So we want Coinbase to be the most trusted and easiest to use place to store crypto, to trade it, and to actually use it. And we can actually become people's primary financial account in some cases in this new crypto economy.
Kind of like a crypto bank?
Yeah, one might say that. I don't think we're ever going to go get actually a bank license, because banks get licenses to do fractional reserve of the assets. I don't really think that's the right path. I think it's caused all kinds of issues with bank failures and that kind of thing. We don't want to do fractional reserve. We want to store 100% of customers' assets. Or if they prefer, they don't even have to store it with us. They can do self-custody. And, you know, if they choose to opt in their funds into some product to earn rewards or something like that, they can choose to do that. We're not going to do it on their behalf in the way that banks do with fractional reserves. So it's a new paradigm. I think that there's a new generation of people who are looking at, they want to see crypto update the financial system, because, you know, 87% of Americans, when you survey them, they say the current financial system doesn't work for them. Fractional reserve is just one piece of that. But if you look at, you know, credit card fees and overdraft fees, and why does it, you know, take 2 or 3 business days to send an ACH transfer? And so our financial system really needs to get updated. And that's what we think, is that crypto is this most important technology to update the financial system globally, bring economic freedom and good financial infrastructure to people all over the world if they just have a smartphone with an internet connection.
So we went to banks 2.0, essentially. If Satoshi Nakamoto is alive, he could be dead, could be alive, I don't know. And he's watching this right now. He would probably just roll his eyes and just think, what did my invention become right now? Because essentially it's just a bank 2.0. It's not about revolution anymore. You just put in Coinbase. You have a little Pokemon card that just sits there. And if you want to get out, you need to fill out all this information. Who are you sending it to? All this stuff. So it's interesting what it's become. And yeah, Monero is the only one that's staying true to what the crypto revolution should be. Anonymous, not caring about what others think. You can do whatever you want with it. It's literally digital cash. It's like cash, but on the internet. And it's awesome. It's unfortunate.
All right. Let's keep moving.
Yeah, let's keep moving. When we talked about this, let's discuss... Yeah, let's go to this one now. This one is very interesting. Potential measures against the Black Marble attack. So recently, Monero has been experiencing a sudden surge in on-chain transaction volume, 15K, 25K per day, to 115-240K per day, which is quite a big jump. Also, last week, we had a lot of viewers, which is nice. Don't forget to like, guys. So if you're watching this and you haven't liked yet, like, share, comment. And we appreciate you being with us every weekend. Now, I highly recommend that you look into this article, this GitHub post, because very, very interesting. But essentially, what happened with the transactions, we can't prove it's not a Black Marble attack. Some people have said it's just organic activity. Some others say that it's not. And since Monero is primarily a tool for preserving privacy, we should err on the side of defensiveness. And I really like this line. We don't have the luxury of assuming the optimistic scenario. Right. Since the downside is that people who rely on Monero are exposed to excess danger. And this is what's very nice about Monero is the way that we think about privacy. We don't just throw the word privacy. We mean privacy. Privacy is taken in its utmost definition. It should be something that protects your life. And it should be something that you really trust if you have to. This situation is simply a reminder that such an attack is currently very practical and cheap in Monero, which is indeed cheap. And then below, you have information on measures. The below is an informal summary of potential measures we have been discussing that can counter such an attack applicable to the Monero protocol in its current state. Since none of these measures is the ultimate one that solves the root issue, some of them can be thought of as a temporary change that can be reverted if when Monero is upgraded to full chain membership proofs. And I'm going to go over these quickly because... So the first one is do nothing, avoids rush decisions, mistakes that could make things worse, and take on another upgrade remedy. Many of these interventions can be rendered ineffective if attacker has a lot of resources. You have the pros and the cons on this side. The con could be attacker can keep lowering the effective ring size at the same cost as now. We can increase the ring size, modify existing dynamic block size parameters, introduce ultra-long-term sanity median. Attacker may eventually reduce/stop their transactions due to higher tax fees. Their tax due to higher tax fees cost. The con is require upgrade. Eventually, higher tax fees in general will have effect only on a very long time scale. Increase in minimum protocol tax fee. Increase in minimum node relay tax fee. A transaction fee. Sorry. Introduce transaction proof of work. And then omitted measures. Measures discussed that omitted from the table because they don't seem to be applicable. Introduce full chain membership proofs, which is the ultimate solution to attacks that reduce the effective ring size, but it's currently not in a deployable state. Shift decoy selection distribution towards older nodes. Counterattack. This would really on honest participants conducting a counter flood, keeping the resulting de-anonymizing transaction data safe and then securely erasing it. All these involve unverifiable actions, and unless perfectly coordinated among all participants, they would be unable to tell if an attack was over or not. Miners limit their size of their blocks. I highly encourage you go into this link and I read this for yourself because it's very, very interesting on the potential measures against this attack.
I really like that that graph that he made. That's good. Mm-hmm.
That's very nice.
Yeah, I mean, basically, something's going to need to be done. It seems like. I think the most likely scenario is we increase the amount of decoys that we have sooner than waiting for the Seraphis upgrade. I think that's the direction things are going to go.
Yeah, there were some talks about raising ring signatures to 40, which would probably at least double the transaction size, which would also, of course, make the fee go up a bit to compensate, but at least, you know, people are getting more privacy instead of just raising the fee.
Right, and we kind of get us ready for full membership proofs, right? Because fees are going to go up with that. Transactions are going to get larger with that as well. And then at that point, we won't be using rings and decoys anymore. And it allows us to increase our privacy faster without having to wait for full membership proofs. Obviously, ideally, as this write-up says, ideally full membership proofs being implemented would be the ultimate solution. It's just going to take time to get there. It may take it, you know, whatever it is, a year and a half. So to be cautious, it would be probably make sense to increase the ring size now, since that's something we could do quickly.
Mm-hmm. But once we do introduce full chain membership proofs, Monero is going to be on steroids for sure. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Let's go on to this. So, let's open this on another link. GNIP. So, this is supply equipment to the anti-authoritarian fighters in front of Ukraine. And you can now donate to them in Monero and USDT. And then we have Drunk Dale's me response. I don't support NATO or mixed war of aggression in Ukraine, but I support fluster on development, voluntary funding of decentralized resistance hardware and Monero. Picking aside a NATO's belligerence is your thing. Okay. Then let's actually go to, let's go to this article. Actually, no. We'll go, it was one that I really wanted to touch on right now. Yeah, let's discuss this one actually right now. Zeno. So they said, we made history. After years of hard work and a good couple of hours of sweating, waiting for the first blog, the Zarkanium hard work went live. So let's take a look a little bit onto what this is all about. It's quite long, so I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but just a summary of it. This is very interesting. So essentially, now I would really wonder how private Zarkanium really is, but essentially how Zarkanium, ZPOS makes POS private. Zarkanium improves upon traditional POS in two fundamental ways. Mount privacy, the number of coins in the staked output is hidden. Untraceability, the output itself is hidden within a group of equiprobable decoy outputs.
Yeah, and I mean, it uses the same technology that Monero uses. It's based off of CryptoNote. Yep. But what's interesting here is they've invented a way to do private proof of stake. First in the space to do it. They actually work with Ko on this. Ko is a Monero dev. So super cool to see that they successfully were able to implement it and make this upgrade. And then there's other things as well, in addition to the private proof of stake that they're implementing, that are also implementing confidential assets. So similar to what Tari promises to be, but Zano kind of beat them to the bunch. They exist, they're live, they have this confidential assets ability. So you can, you know, make assets on top of Zano. And in a private way, which is pretty interesting. I mean, what interests me most in that regard is a privacy stable coin, perhaps, that could be built on top of Zano. Mm-hmm. That's something that I would like to see.
Yeah, for sure. They'll definitely change the game, especially when paying developers Monero. We do have the fluctuation in price, so a private stable coin would, you know, solve some of their issues. Yeah, but this is very interesting. So it's good to see. Let's go to this one. This one is, again, a lengthy article. Executive order on ensuring responsible development of digital assets. This is from Joe Biden. So Section 1 policy, advances in digital and distributed ledger technology for financial services have led to dramatic growth in markets for digital assets. Profound implications for the protection of consumers, investors, and businesses, including data privacy and security, financial stability and systemic risk, crime, national security, the ability to exercise human rights, financial inclusion and equity in energy demand, and climate change. Then we have all kinds of objectives, like this one: we must protect consumers, investors, and businesses in the United States. We must protect the United States and global financial stability and mitigate systemic risk. We must mitigate the illicit finance and national security risks posed by misuse of digital assets. Then talk about financing terrorism and all this stuff. Digital assets for the anti-money laundering. Poor or non-existing implementation of those standards in some jurisdiction abroad can present significant illicit financing risk for the United States and global financial systems. It's got to be curious how that's going to be implemented. must reinforce United States leadership in the global financial system, must promote access to safe and affordable financial services, all kinds of stuff. I highly recommend that if you're interested, read this whole paper written by Joe Biden.
His handlers.
Yeah, his executive order. So it's just a further encroachment on privacy tech and crypto. They're making moves, guys. They're making moves. They're laying out the whole roadmap for us. They're letting us know that they're coming for us. The administration's roadmap to mitigate cryptocurrency risks. Thank you, Biden.
Just off shaky.
All right. Does Biden have any idea what's going on with any of that? Absolutely not. Guy just signed.
He just wants his ice cream. That's it. That's the only reason he lives, so he can have ice cream.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. Well, let's watch this video. It's 1 minute. It's on John Carvalho, Bitcoin Analog, has woken up to the fact that the design of the Bitcoin Lightning Network is a joke. So let's go ahead and watch.
The degree of complexity and fragility of Lightning, and especially for the use case that people intend for it, which is like end users running their own nodes, and even more crazy, end users running their own routing nodes, it's just very, very fragile. And going through that experience just made me realize that the design is kind of a joke. Like, we can make it work. We can do our best. But it, like, all of the kind of narratives that came with it in the first couple of years were really exaggerated. You know, like things like Lightning is going to kill Visa and everybody will be using Lightning. And there are a lot of issues with scaling it economically. There are a lot of issues with dealing with all the multiple implementations and incompatibilities, and again, the fragilities causing force closes, liquidity management, and it just goes on and on and on. And all of the things that, like, people that aren't engineers and aren't building these products, like, even if they feel like they fully appreciate the complexity because they, like, study it a lot, they still don't get it. Like, it's just so much worse than people think to actually make this stuff and string it together.
It would be nice if it killed Visa, but it would be nicer if it actually worked well as well. Yeah, but it's very good to see someone from Bitcoin that is working on Bitcoin that, you know, he's seeing the miscomings of the technology, and then he talks about it openly. That's good to see.
Yeah, I mean, Lightning, it's interesting, because Lightning itself would actually be better if they fixed the issue on the base layer, which is why they created Lightning, which is, you know, the block size and the fees, because part of the reason why Lightning sucks. Yeah, Lightning's really complicated, but, you know, a layer two could be needed for something like Monero in the future. But Lightning itself is not great. It's not great technology. It's very hard to implement. It's frustrating to use. And then the biggest issue is that the whole reason Lightning was created, which was to get around having to do transactions on layer one because of the fees, well, you end up doing that a lot anyway. Just to add more liquidity to your channel, you have to do another on-chain transaction, and it's not great.
Yeah, I know. It's gonna be interesting. What Body said in the comments, which I wanted to say, it's hilarious to watch all the laser eyes on Twitter talk shit at John, not realizing that he's a Bitcoin dev himself. But even if your technology is not good in some aspects, it's very important to remain open and to really work on making it better, which a lot of people from the Bitcoin community are not, and they just, you know, blindly say that it's the best without really, you know. Let's go into the next thing. And this one is actually really disturbing. So ENS x Google, the news is true. Google now gives wallet information for ENS name searches. One step closer to mass adoption. So you can just look up Vitalik.eth, and then you're going to get his Ethereum balance.
We have arrived.
Yay. Mass adoption.
What's happening, guys?
All right. You can look up on Google how much people, much money people have. Fucking money is gross. And it is gross.
This is why I put my ENS domain on a dedicated wallet that has basically no Ethereum on it, because Ethereum's not private.
Yeah, but this is next level of invasion of privacy. And this is mass adoption, being able to just say Tony.eth. And you can see the ETH or dog.eth, or, you know, This is really disturbing.
I mean, is it? I mean, you could already do that with like tools, I'm sure, but now it's just exposed on Google.
Yeah.
And I did try that myself earlier, and I couldn't get to show that. So maybe they're still rolling it out.
Mm-hmm.
It is funny though how like how excited they are about this. Like the actual ENS.eth.org is like, yeah, look at this. You can just pull up anyone's domain and see how much Ethereum they have. And this Vitalik guy has just like almost 1K Ethereum. It's too funny.
Somebody posted a clown GIF and they said, let's make it even easier to dox someone's holdings. Yes, and now you can pretty much...
Yay.
Yeah. You can find someone's address now. You can find someone's pictures. You go on Facebook, whatever, and you can find their how much money they have. That's awesome. Yeah. Not good. This one is also... We had really good... not positive news, but really interesting news for this week. The Iranian regime has passed a law allowing for the deduction of money from bank accounts of women who don't adhere to mandatory hijab. They will use surveillance plus AI to find violators. Yet another example of how fiat currency is a tool of control. Yeah, fiat currency, banks for sure, but CBDC as well. But that's why they're pushing CBDCs. That's what they're doing. What they're doing in Europe, as we saw, there was a study in 2019. They asked a bunch of people, "Do you like cash?" And 90% of people say, "Yeah, we want cash." What are they doing now in 2024? They're trying to get rid of cash, and people don't want that. Which is gonna be that's definitely gonna pass in the west of Europe first. Eastern Europe is going to be, I think, really resilient when it comes to that, because we have a lot of countries that are cash dominant. Albania is extremely cash dominant, so I'm curious of how that's going to go. Like, I struggled when I was there to use my credit card at all. I didn't want to use it anyway, but even if I really had to, because they didn't want it, just cash. Romania, you can use debit cards in a lot of places, but cash is still very dominant. People like cash, so Eastern Europe is going to definitely lag when it comes to the stuff, which is good. But that's why they want to get rid of cash, limit it, get you on the systems. It's going to be interesting eventually when we're probably going to cover a news section, which we discuss incentives of how they want us to use CBDCs, like get discounts, like 20%, 30% discounts for such and such if you use a CBDC. They're going to make incentives for people to get on the system. But this is just one example of what they're gonna do. So yeah, well, I'm pretty sure that was it for this week. Don't think we have anything else. Yeah, no, that was it for this week, guys. This was a new sec. So bye.
All right, great job, Tony. Fantastic.
Thank you
as always. Let's move along. We're about almost 3 hours in. We'll do viewers on stage.
No, haven't even started viewers on stage.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, guys, I don't know how long we could do this one for, but let's go. Let's do it.
All right, running it right now. Thanks, Tony.
It's the Viewers on Stage segment. It's that time where we invite you, the viewers, up on stage to comment on what you've heard so far today, ask the guest a question, or maybe talk about what. Come on down.
All right. Inviting people up. Yeah. Still with Surfer and Alaskanon, the two regulars. Welcome back. Welcome back. Sorry we didn't do Viewers on Stage last week. Of course, we were...
How dare you?
And it would...
freaking dare you.
Yeah, I know.
The regular shortwave and the class clown, Alaska Nun.
I do have a question.
Wait, let's bring Tony Davis up as well. I don't know if he wants to participate in this.
Yeah, if anyone else is backstage and wants to come up, just message in the private chat and I'll try to add you up.
I'll pull Body up too. I don't know if he wants.
So yeah, I do have a question, not to Tony specifically about like the XMR AI, but I do have a general question. What is the size of not full membership proof, like the size of transactions? Because you mentioned something to the effect of if we move the ring size to 40, it would double the transaction size, which would obviously increase the fees a little bit. But in my opinion, that's okay, especially if full membership proofs are going to be even larger than that. So like if it's, say, 3 kilobytes to send a 40 ring signature, where it's 1.5 now, and full membership proofs are going to be, say, 5 kilobytes, then that's fine, because we're just getting closer to what it's going to be eventually anyway. So the fees won't go up all at once.
I agree. Exactly.
I think that's the thinking, yeah.
I mean, let's not forget, and I barely caught it, but Luke has been talking about ways to reduce the computational overhead. A lot of these things may not be the issue that they I mean, they're not even an issue now, but the idea of computational overhead that was a much bigger deal during the early Bitcoin days are becoming much less of an issue now. So, and there's a lot of ideas on the table about making them much, much less significant than they are now.
Good points. Good points, guys. Mute your mics when you're not speaking. Body, I noticed they talked about your proof of work idea. That's pretty cool. I don't know. Is that something that's actually being considered? Body, I don't know if you're there.
Yeah, I'm here. No, I don't think it's, I don't know. I guess you'd have to, I didn't see anyone that expressed a whole lot of interest in it. It seems like a lot of people kind of misunderstood it too. A lot of people are saying, well, then the miners will just do your proof of work for you. And it's like, no, this is a totally, it would be a totally separate proof of work. And while technically, yes, the miners could do your proof of work on your transaction for you, they would have to divert their resources from actually mining the network to do that. So you'd have to pay them even more than you would transaction fees to convince them to actually mine your transaction. So why would anyone do that when you could just spend 2 to 4 seconds computing your own transaction hash? And again, it's like people said, well, it's not going to change that much. You know, it's like we actually would need to do the math on that to see, okay, how much hash power could be generated by, say, 100,000 or 500,000 transactions, individuals doing their own hash power on like a 3-5 year old mobile device. So it really, we'd have to like run the numbers on that and say, okay, could enough hash power be generated to actually significantly supplement what an attacker would have to pay to flood the chain with transactions? Like, okay, let's suppose hypothetically that there's 100,000 extra transactions flooding the XMR chain right now than was previously there. So how much is that extra costing them? And then how much extra would it cost them to have to rent the CPU to do the transaction hash for each of those transactions? It could be the case that it's actually like negligible for them, in which case there's no reason to implement it. But I'd say like if it's even half as much or equally as much cost for them, then it might be worth implementing. It's at least worth considering. But I felt like a lot of people didn't really fully understand the idea. The other thing too is it would be a flat fee. Like you wouldn't have a difficulty change. It wouldn't be like, oh, there's more transactions on this, so the transaction fee goes up or the transaction hash difficulty goes up. It would just be a flat fee. So again, like the devil's in the details. It would be required to do specific calculations on that, which maybe I'll get around to doing that at some point. I just wanted to toss the idea out there for, you know, some of the smart guys that might be more interested or capable to do those kind of calculations so that they could do them. So
anyways, I think proof of work could be considered. That along with like having that on top of the existing fees, I think that would be, especially as devices get more powerful, like I could see that being potentially an issue with really old devices, like making it take a lot longer to send transactions. But at the same time, like how often are you sending transactions? Like it probably isn't going to be that big of a deal yet. If, you know, someone's trying to spam, suddenly they have to do that equivalent of hash power to send the equal amount of transactions. So, I think it's worth looking into for sure. And I'm glad that you're pushing that idea because I think doing proof of work for things is like newer. And I think it should be used more as we're seeing like with what Tor implemented recently.
Yeah, it was interesting. Tor, like Monero kind of showed that CPU proof of work is viable and very hard to defeat. And then Tor implemented it in a totally different context, in a non-monetary context. Yeah, I mean, I think hopefully we start to see more and more of this pop up.
That was the original reason proof of work was invented, the original.
It's a hashcat, right? Yeah, so I guess technically it's not that new because of the hashcat, but I think it's newer as being like something that's not used with a lot of products or software right now.
Yeah, I think, and I'm kind of speculating here, but the original was for email spam, right, to try and prevent email spam. But, you know, simple, dumb hashing is easily defeated by ASICs. It seems like for many years that kind of probably got put on the back burner, but now that CPU proof of work seems to be holding up quite well, maybe we'll see a resurgence of that concept.
Or what do they call it? It's called hash mail, wasn't it? I was calling it like hash cash or something.
Well, it was Adam Back, right, that invented it. And yeah, it was for email purposes. And then eventually it was implemented into hash cash, I believe.
So it was called hash cash. Got it. And now, of course, you know, Monero's proof of work is quite ASIC resistant, so...
Very cool, very cool. Tux, you want to put the link out for anybody else that wants to jump up and comment on anything they've heard today? Maybe you're a samurai person, you want to come up because you didn't like the way we were putting the truth out there, or maybe it was wrong. Come correct us. Everybody's.
Do you guys mind if I dove in a little bit on the drama?
Oh, I just want to say something real quick. I don't know, like, from me, I'm not like up here, like up in arms against like samurai or the samurai people. The main person who I had some interaction.
Don't let them scare you, Tux. Don't let them scare you. Don't worry.
No, because I don't know all the people part of the samurai. I don't know everyone. I know just a couple people. And the main person who seems to be pretty nasty is T-Dev. I don't know any of the other people who are a part of it, so I'm not like up here trying to trash talk like anyone who's a part of samurai.
No, but none of us are. It's a T-Dev problem, but it's a cultural problem that they have over there.
I'd be happy to take the alternate position. I'm more than okay with trash talking somebody real quick if nobody...
Go ahead, ask it out. Let's hear it.
Go for it, brother.
So, I mean, fair enough. If I was a person who probably doesn't get along with my family because I'm an elitist hypocrite and I'm probably insufferable at the dinner table, I might be lashing out for attention too. Because that's just something that people tend to do when they don't get along with anybody. And unfortunately, all of his Bitcoin gains in his deep wallet probably still doesn't impress the ladies. Well, Doug has this magnetic personality, and he's shredded like a pork sandwich, right? So he's probably a little jealous. And I can imagine, you know, it's easy to get jealous of somebody who's so much better than you, and you're going to look for some kind of reason to, you know, hate on him. But I just wanted to point out real quick that in the end, what we're doing right now is we're fighting a war. And if this guy is standing on his principles in any way that he's actually trying to bring down the banking system, he needs to humble himself and go to the greats. So I missed a lot of what was said this morning because I think I was up until like 5 a.m. Alaska time. So that gave me about an hour to sleep. But I pulled up some quotes just from memory and I tried to, put them in one place. So I'm going to start with the art of war, because if you're going to claim that you are at war with the elitist banking cartel, you know, maybe shut the hell up and read something from the people who were successful in war before you, T-Dev. So here we go. When in difficult country, do not encamp. In country where high roads intersect, join hands with your allies. Do not linger in dangerously isolated positions. And I'm sure he's very used to isolation to the point where it's a fish swimming in water. He doesn't even know that he's all by himself on his soapbox. But continuing, on open ground, do not block the enemy's way. So there's several interpretations from this, but I'm going to lean on the interpretation and quote Tisthaus Kung's interpretation, which is, draw closer together, i.e. see that a portion of your own army is not cut off. On the ground of intersecting highways, join hands with your allies, or perhaps form alliances with neighboring states. So while this guy is constantly, and by the way, if he's going to talk about government psyops and such, as a person who has been deeply involved in these things, fragmenting the enemy is your priority. So he's doing their work for them if he wants to sit and talk about how he's trying to defend us against infiltrators and shills. Why bother when people like you are sitting here creating disturbances in the alliance and preventing people from joining hands commonly against the enemy? So if you were to look at this from a adversarial perspective, put your red hat on, Hacker Man. How would the enemy be using the art of war to break crypto? Well, here's a quote. When this is also Sun Tzu. When a warlike prince attacks a powerful state, his generalship shows itself preventing the concentration of enemy's forces. Interesting. He overawes his opponents and their allies are prevented from joining against him. Hence, he does not strive to ally himself with all and sundry, nor does he foster the power of other states. He carries out his own secret designs, keeping antagonists in awe. Thus, he is able to capture their cities and overthrow their kingdoms. So the premise behind this here, T-Dev, if you've ever even studied the art of war before, is by preventing your enemies from joining hands, you can wage war on a more powerful or more technically inclined adversary. So every time you run your dumbass mouth, you are playing right into the hands of the enemy that you claim to be fighting. So wake up, read a book. But let's continue. one of the greatest warriors of all time, and if you believe the end of the Bible, the greatest warrior of all time. But Jesus said to him, "Do not stop him, for one who is not against you is for you. Where is this evidence that you have of Doug doing anything against you?" So you're walking right into a trap by being this wound up, like, spastic autist, and you're playing into the enemy's hands with this drama. So Miyamoto Musashi, author of The Five Rings, says it another way. I like the Jesus quote better, but here you go. "The important thing in strategy is to suppress the enemy's useful actions, but allow his useless actions." Every single time you're dumping onto an audience of your Twitter post, which, by the way, they don't care what you have to say. They want to know what Samurai Wallet has to say. And all of your absolute retard takes are undermining everything that you're working for. But I'll continue. "When you are thoroughly conversant with strategy, you will recognize that the enemy's intentions and thus have many opportunities to win." So in other words, Doug is doing this. If you actually believe that What's-His-Nuts from Wasabi Wallet is your enemy, well, conversations with that person will undermine the weaknesses in his argument. So what are you talking about, giving a platform and all of that? Let me just read this one more time for you, bro, just to get it through your head, okay? The important thing in strategy is to suppress the enemy's useful actions but allow his useless action. "When you are thoroughly conversant with strategy, you will recognize the enemy's intentions and thus have many opportunities to win." Once again, Doug is doing this. You are not. You are not some warrior preaching as a general to your troops here. You're just making waves in your own camp. So, to continue on, here's another quote. "Both in fighting and in everyday life, you should be determined through calm, meet situations without tenseness, yet not recklessly. Your spirit settled yet unbiased." Doug is over there just like chilling on his fucking cannabis cloud over there, enjoying his life, getting the word out, building an army of people that are working together on focused, targeted projects to accomplish a goal. You're supposed to be building Samurai Wallet, but you're not doing it. You're just talking, okay? And the idea here, What Miyamoto Musashi is saying, is you should be in a state of calm and focus. You should not be tense about, like, the infiltrators coming to get you, okay? That's what a warrior acts like. So let's see what the next quote on the... This is actually from the same chapter, even. But my question is, why you mad, bro? Why you mad? Someone once said, "Immature strategy is the cause of grief." That was a true saying. Miyamoto Musashi won hundreds of battles in sword fighting, not a single loss. He was one of the greatest educators of all time, all right? And he is saying that you live in immature strategy and that you are the cause of grief. All right, let's continue. "No wonder you act like such a bitch. The way of the warrior is to master the virtue of his weapons. He must have a leading towards strategy. For if a gentleman dislikes, he will not appreciate the benefit of weaponry." Communication is one of the most powerful weapons that we have right now. And the disruption of communication within the cryptosphere is our biggest downfall right now. You've got all of these people trying to pump their bags by clawing down giants so they can get a couple cents on their Shiba Inu gains or whatever. This whole idea of undermining each other's arguments with little to no evidence and trying to shut down communication amongst the inner circle of crypto, outsiders are looking in, not knowing how to move forward. So when I go out and I start talking to people about crypto, anybody who's listened to me on the show knows I am not an advocate for Bitcoin. I'm not an advocate for transparent blockchains and all of this other stuff. But if somebody's interested in Bitcoin and they're trying to get out of the fiat Fed note financialized casino, blah, 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 even though Bitcoin has an ETF and a transparent ledger and all that stuff, I'm not going to undermine something better than what they're using now. I'm going to let them dabble. I'm going to let them grow. I'm going to let them experience whatever it is that they have to experience, learn how to use wallets and so on. Because in the end, Bitcoin is my ally. Okay. Or Ethereum. I mean, there's so many things about Ethereum that just set me off as far as like, if we're going to lead crypto into a realm of smart contracts and all of this other stuff, do I think Ethereum is the way to do it? Of course not. I don't think that Ethereum is the way to do it, but it's certainly better than the legal system. Stop undermining your own allies. Read a little bit of Eastern warrior philosophy. Read a little bit of some of these Stoics and understand what it is to be a man and get the job done. So that's my two cents. I hope that helps.
On a slightly different take.
Fantastic, man. It reminds me of that that meme where you see the crabs trying to crawl out of the pot, and they just keep pulling each other down.
That's called crab pot mentality.
Crab pot mentality.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just not sure because it didn't seem like it. With the talking earlier about doing hashing for transactions, I think mainly I heard Arctic Mine was against it. I think that's what I understood. Was mainly against it due to the fact of somebody in, like, say, Africa, where it's 45 degrees Celsius, having to do proof of work to do a transaction would be a problem, where somebody in Canada, where it's 40 below zero Celsius, would have no problem doing that same transaction. The heat is the heat would be the problem, according to him. I think that was his big thing against using proof of work for actually submitting a transaction itself.
I just didn't, I honestly didn't find the very compelling argument, because why would you offload your proof of work to someone, like to a miner mining your transactions, when you could just do it yourself in 2 to 4 seconds? I might kind of end up retracting this argument here, because in the comments, what's it, UTXO made a good point. He said, listen, it's just examine it. Let me actually find this comment here. I can read it word for word. The extra cost for 100,000 transactions per day. So assuming that what we're getting attacked with is 100,000 transactions per day, the extra cost for 100,000 transactions per day would be 100,000 times the 2 or 4 seconds you quoted. So I just did some quick math on that, some napkin math. 100,000 transactions per day is about 1.15 transactions per second. So if we're targeting, say, 3 seconds on a mobile device, that would basically mean 3 CPUs is all you would need to, like, with this kind of construct, you'd only need about 3 CPUs to that transaction hash. So it wouldn't probably work, actually. Like, it would be negligible for an attacker to come up with 3 CPUs. So I might end up just kind of retracting this this idea. But, you know.
Body, because hello, how are you all? I want to say something.
Good, go ahead.
Go for it, bro.
There are two aspects to that. One is the contribution to the 51% attack. And another thing is that you are hashing inside of the network. You are attacking different nodes. There are two problems. There are 51% attack. And then there is the thing of attacking the nodes exterior to the network. So it's distinct. I don't know how to evaluate that.
Well, the idea, I think, dies regardless. Just simply because of the low CPU cost, it seems like. I mean, that is just kind of like off the cuff. You know, it seems like a good way of looking at it. UTXO pointed it out. So it's probably just not worth it just from the, it's just not going to stop an attacker.
Then again, if this is an attack, how badly is it affecting the ring size? Because if it's only affecting it by a couple of signatures, that's not really that big of a problem. Like, if it's taking the ring size from 16 down to, say, 11, is that really such a big issue? Like, I mean, I know it is an issue, don't get me wrong, but is that a huge compromise? And I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either. Just like doing some thinking out loud right now, if we assume that this transaction bump was entirely an attack, that means they own about 2/3 to 3/4 of all the transactions on the network. So that would imply that at least in the short term, right, in terms of the transactions that you take, your decoys that you take, in terms of the decoy selection algorithm,
right? That's only going to affect the near-term decoy selection algorithm unless they continue this, you know, going months and months from now. That would imply maybe they own 3 to 4 of the decoys in any transaction, like any transaction happening now. So, I mean, that means we're still good with, you know, we're still looking at something like 10 to 12 decoys for each transaction that they don't own, which I think would be like that wouldn't necessarily give them much information, it seems like. And I think this is along the nature of what what developers have said, is that like you need to own like 90% of the outputs in the network to really be able to unwind the transaction graph. So, I mean, it seems like they would need to go something closer to 200,000 or 300,000 transactions consistently to be able to truly unwind the network.
So my next question on this topic would simply be, do we have any new evidence that this is an attack?
I don't think so. I mean, people are just looking at the transactions themselves and the fact that they are they're all one in and two out. But my understanding is that would be a typical transaction anyway, right?
Yeah, you get a lot of one in and two outs and two ins and two outs. You get a lot of those.
So my
to see if Ruckneum can identify like different distributions before and after the transaction surge.
So my thinking on this is like, how many people churn their wallet on a, you know, let's say weekly basis or monthly basis? How many people add wallets to the network? How many people are, you know, sending out coins to, you know, fresh adoption? And how much might that account for with the removal of centralized exchanges? So I got a guy who I work with who, I mean, he had a horrible boating accident, so this is no longer true, but he did all of his shillcoin degeneracy on exchanges. And anytime he was swapping things from, you know, one coin to another or whatever, he never left an exchange. Well, if you take that guy and you take him off of an exchange and he continues his degeneracy and then he takes his profits in Monero, I mean, that for a lot of people is a transaction a day, two transactions a day. If people were taking their gains in Monero and now they can't, it lines up with the time. It lines up with the numbers. I'm still struggling to build a case that there is in fact an attack going on. And even if the idea was some government agency is trying to build a body of transactions that they can use to remove 1, 2, 3 from a ring signature, wouldn't we have seen a much bigger spike than this? Right?
Go
ahead.
Last time when we were talking to Arctic Mine, it's 60 bucks to wait. If you're a miner, you wait 60 bucks. It's not 10. That's embarrassing, however. Let's continue. Do you know that there is a public secret in Monero? When you do the bindings with the Peterson commitments, you have H, and the private key of H is gamma. Gamma times G is H. And if the IRS is listening, if you can crack that through IBM quantum computer, that's how badass Monero is. It only has one key. If you find that key, you break the whole fucking protocol. Yes.
You know, that's a very interesting conundrum. I mean, it would be all theory right now that somebody can break such a key. But it's a very interesting problem indeed. But I definitely don't think that. You know, I'd also point out, if there was a thesis that might lead to cracking this key, it would also undermine the idea of a state actor flooding the pool with transactions. You see what I'm saying? Like, right now, as far as what's literally happening right now, there's all of this talk about if there is, you know, some kind of attack going on and people are, you know, they're shooting at ghosts, and it's like, we still don't even have the evidence that there's an attack going on. And it brings up a lot of interesting theoretical, like, you know, what can be done about it and what can, but.
Last going on, I have another FUD that's really bad. I posted the link there if you can bring it up. It's about the data availability problem. I did my homework and I just posted that link. that speaks upon that. And if you want to check it out, just so, because it has been in the rumors that with the ZK rollups, there is a VAT availability problem as well. So, yeah.
I think it's interesting that you brought it up in the form of the Chia Netspace chart.
Yeah, data availability is definitely one of the like sticking points, one of the difficult points when it comes to rollups. It's like, how do you achieve that so that, because it's part of being able to verify the history of the rollup. And I'm not sure, but I think not all constructions require that you verifying the history of the rollup, but some of them do. So yeah, that's definitely one of the big challenges of doing rollups.
No, the thing is that no one wants to keep the data from the blockchain on the client side. And what the fuck is an exabyte? I don't know what, like, 1,000 terabytes, 1,000 petabytes, it's 1,000 terabytes, it's 1,000 gigabytes, and people are like panicking. Oh my god, we don't have enough space. It's gonna run out soon. We're gonna throw fucking hard drives on the Pacific Ocean, and we're gonna be green. It's with Chia.
Yeah, the available data problem is always a really interesting question to me, because the minute that there's an economic need to do, does anybody remember when Chia was coming out and everybody started buying like piles of SSDs and like just pumped the price? And then coincidentally, it was only like 5 or 6 months later that you could get an SSD for just like the most ridiculously cheap prices ever. In fact, I remember Tux is like guiding me towards some different kinds of SSDs that a guy could get. And like, the prices were so ridiculously low. Like if you wanted, you could just fill your house with SSDs for like a couple grand and have an infinite amount of storage space.
I have a 500 gig SSD on my node right now, and when we start getting close to that level, I'll grab a 2 terabyte SSD and throw in there instead.
Yeah, I remember that whole Chia thing because I've been doing self-hosting stuff for a while, so I have like NAS drives and stuff, and it was one of those things that caused the market to, just like Ethereum when it was on proof of work and GPUs were practically unattainable for a while, but now SSDs are really cheap, and they have gone up a little bit, though, I will say, over the past few months. Probably about 4 months ago, around October, November, they were the cheapest they have ever been. I got a couple Samsung 990 Pros, 2 terabytes for $100 each, which is like insane. They're a bit more now. NAND manufacturers recently raised their prices for NAND due to inflation and because people are selling stuff for too cheap. But it's still pretty cheap now, and you know, it'll get cheaper over time still.
You know, and one can only hope that the move back from cloud into self-hosted, or like, you know, amongst a small group of peers self-hosting servers, one can only hope that that's going to stabilize market forces and that there will be a better matchup between supply and demand. I mean, one would think that's going to be the case. And the other thing is, it's only a matter of time before the people that hold such a vested interest in maybe slightly dated storage technologies, you know, they lose or at least quit caring about the patents. And then it moves into other markets and older generations of storage become widely available for super cheap.
Hey, guys, I would have a question. Last week with Arctic Mind, it sounds like for me that the transaction count is normal behavior, which would be good. Hopefully it is like this. But the dynamic block size and everything. So if I understand correctly, it kicked already in. Or so what I experienced today was big troubles with some transaction. So I want to ask, is this also behavior for you, what you feel? Or was it maybe cake related? Because last time was also discussed that a bit problems with the server and everything. Can you give me an answer?
Describe your problem.
Pardon?
Describe the problem, please.
A transaction needed a long time to go through. Then our cake wallet themselves was not syncing correctly. I saw the transaction, then it was gone again.
Yeah, so yeah. Those are two separate problems. The first one was that there was a bug in the Monero core wallet code, which CakeWallet also uses, that was causing the automatic fee setting to not appropriately raise the fee. So people's transactions had too low of a fee and it was getting stuck for a while, taking like 20 to 40 minutes to confirm. Simply raising to medium would fix that, and now that issue is already fixed if you have the latest version of the wallet. And then the separate issue was our nodes were down for a good while due to the amount of transactions that nodes were having to process, not from people making transactions to our nodes, but simply every single node has to have the same copy of transactions if they're a full node, which we run only full nodes. And the amount of transactions that were suddenly going across the network was just really high, and the node software wasn't handling it very well. And it was responding very slowly, and so our load balancer, doing its job, simply decided to put our nodes as, mark them as unhealthy, because they were taking so long to respond. But unfortunately, all of them basically were taking so long to respond, they're all marked as unhealthy because of the peer-to-peer traffic between nodes causing the node software to just slow down. And there's some issues in the node software itself that'll have to be patched over time, causing one portion, which is RPC, to slow down because of peer-to-peer traffic. But that issue is mostly resolved now. We have some improved infrastructure. Our node guy had worked tirelessly to make it better, so everything should be good now.
I would also point out that Cake Wallet is going way above and beyond as far as providing nodes to, let's call it, the pleb user. But people should be either hosting their own nodes or supplying, you know, maybe some support to the guys who do host their own nodes. And I would love to plug on your behalf, Tux.pizza. He does take Monero transactions. Feel free to donate. But there are a lot of people who provide nodes that are not do not have, you know, however many hundred billion trillion people who are using Cake right now. And that is also one of the reasons why I'm such a strong supporter of the idea of the Nodo, because it is my opinion that the future of wallets and nodes are people using a light wallet and then having either for themselves or maybe a small group of people a dedicated device that does all of your node hosting needs. And it further decentralizes and further distributes the workload. And this spike in transaction volumes has been an unbelievably valuable beta test for both dynamic block sizes and the throughput of nodes. We've learned a lot as a community from how this very unique technology functions as it scales up. Now, unfortunately for Cake, they always get the brunt of that damage because they're doing like an immense amount of the work for the community as far as computationally and so on when these things happen. But the good news is a person who's or a group of people trusted within the community are on the front lines of all of the new data and all of the new, you know, all of the new research that can be done with all of this, with what has happened with the transaction spikes. And if you haven't purchased a Monero Nodo, by the way, I mean, you clearly are no economist because the value proposition here is mind-boggling. It's an incredible piece of technology. Go to MoneroNodo.com. I am in no way benefiting at all from plugging this. But the more people that are hosting nodes and offering that service to others, the more distributed the node network becomes. It will even mine in the background. So it also decentralizes hashing power. There's a lot of reasons why people should be interested in getting themselves a Monero Nodo. But above all else, the aesthetics of this device are amazing. You know, if you're courting some lovely lady and she's on the fence and then sees your new hotness of a Monero orange Nodo sitting on your network, well, I just hope you saved up enough for all the babies you're going to be having because it's the hotness, okay? Chicks love it. So
I had a question about Reggie Middleton. I don't know if it sounded like Body wasn't aware of it. Anybody on the panel have any awareness of Reggie Middleton's patent on DeFi and his suit with Coinbase, the lawsuits going on, and the fact that he's won every lawsuit that he's filed so far. So anything based on DeFi is really in jeopardy of, you know, some kind of legal action in the future. Of course, he's not doing anything now because he's wanting them to take off. And my second question is, just to confirm, is Monero based on DeFi, and would it be in jeopardy of that kind of legal action?
No, I mean, Monero and DeFi don't really have anything to do with each other.
The other thing is patents trolling is extremely difficult with open source projects. Ethereum has put themselves in an interesting situation, but what Body was saying, even though he was saying that he didn't have a whole lot of knowledge on the topic of Reggie Middleton specifically, was pretty on point, which is when you have a foundation that is taking money and it is using technology that may have a patent on it, you do open yourself up a lot more to, at the very least, drawn out court battles. Monero doesn't actually use DeFi. Now, one place that it does overlap a little bit is people like myself believe that Monero will be the underlying currency for DeFi. You know, Hiveno is a good example. DarkFi is a good example where the crypto that will be the liquidity underlying these transactions is likely to be Monero. But DarkFi and Hiveno are open source. They don't directly collect money. Now, there is, with Hiveno, there is money that is collected and then redistributed. And then DarkFi has investors, I believe. But now they may have to do the legalese dance a little bit. They're far better positioned to not get in trouble. And on top of that, there's going to be precedent set from any legal action that takes place here if it does in fact happen. In fact, even if it settles out of court, it will probably create a certain level of clarity for how far these patents actually go. I myself am not familiar with Reggie Middleton or his patent, other than I know that a lot of people attribute Reggie Middleton to being like the DeFi guy, but that's all I know.
So I just did a little bit of searching, kind of jogged my memory. Reggie Middleton was attacked by the SEC, and this was like 4 years ago now. I actually know, or at least have met, one of his lawyers that helped him. And I mean, the guy, he was actually one of the first guys to fight the SEC, in cryptocurrency. It seemed that Reggie was one of these guys that had come in to register, right? The SEC's like, come on in and talk to us, you know, come register and, you know, we'll work with you. He was one of these guys that tried to do that and had been in talks for a long time with the SEC. Okay, here's what we're doing, blah, blah, blah. And then they just basically slapped a lawsuit on him. And he's like, whoa, hang on a second. You didn't mention any of this stuff to me. Like, you just slap a lawsuit on me. I was trying to be compliant, and this is how you treat me? It was kind of one of those, like, appalling situations that you're like, how could you possibly be acting in good faith, SEC? If you're going to conduct yourself this way. So he had a...
We could call that a Roman. Whenever you try to KYC your Bitcoin or whatever, they Romaned him, you know?
Turn his name into a verb. He got Middletoned. He got Romaned. He got Romanoffed. That one sounds better. He got Romanoffed.
Oof. Yeah, that's...
Guys, I just want to chime in here. People are interpreting this UE legislation as... banning them, to be more specific, payments to and from any self-custody wallet is illegal. So people are interpreting it as that. I don't know where they're getting that interpretation from, but that sounds insane. That would essentially be like the banning of Cake Wallet at that point. But
may I just point out
that's got to be a misunderstanding, right? Because they were talking about hosted wallets.
No, I think it is. I think it is. They're trying to ban all wallets. They're really going for the jugular over there.
You know, the best weapon that our community has against this stuff, though, is apathy. I realize
exactly.
It's the purpose of Monero talk to not use apathy. So this is not meant to be a dig at Doug, but
sorry, is this the end all be all of Monero, or am I wrong here? Is this the wrong meeting?
Yeah, we're trying to decide what to do with our bags before it all comes crashing down. I mean, you must have missed it earlier, but that was the but seriously, anybody who's listening, fear is your biggest enemy, and then apathy is the enemy's biggest fear. So I could put it a little differently, right? So the EPA in the United States has all of these rules and laws and regulations and codes and whatever language you want to slap on it, where it's like, oh, if your vehicle blah, blah, blah emits blah, blah, blah parts per million, or if you don't have a diesel exhaust fluid system in your diesel and blah, blah, blah. And they do their token like lawsuit against some small time mechanic here and there. And it's funny because when people bend over and take it, they reinforce the idea that the EPA can just make these rules. But when people fight it, the EPA, for fear of somebody setting the precedent that their rules are meaningless, they turn tail and run. Okay. But the best weapon by far that we have against EPA regulations is to not only ignore them, but blatantly, openly violate them. So if you come to Alaska, you'd be hard pressed to even find a truck that has a diesel exhaust fluid system, because the first thing that anyone does when they buy a new diesel truck is they get rid of those systems. And the economic viability is such where if you're a diesel mechanic, you start an LLC, you start removing DEF systems, and then they bankrupt you. You roll up the LLC, you throw it away, and then you start another company and you start removing diesel exhaust systems again, right? And the economic viability of being that guy, you could be a millionaire in 5 years if you're a talented mechanic just doing this over and over and over again. Just like if you live in, you know, Germany and you sell weed, you can get filthy rich. This is not an advocate, but if you are, make sure you're using Monero. But does like,
the mechanic, least,
go ahead.
Does the mechanic take Monero? I got a diesel.
I wouldn't know, because I would never engage in any illegal activities where Monero is used for the deletion of a diesel exhaust system. And I would never know where a guy could find something like that. I just see these trucks everywhere that are just doing that.
Your theoretical educational information.
Yeah, this is for educational purposes only. But you can reach me at, well, anyway. But it's so important. I want to stick to the crypto part, though, which is when the government comes along and starts, you know, running their mouth about we're going to ban this, we're going to ban that. What makes them not only back down, but your best defense against tyranny entirely, is to either A, ignore them, or B, humiliate them. And humiliation works even better, because tyrants usually have an ego problem. So when people don't care about what they have to say, it's a living nightmare. Have you guys ever heard of the idea of most people would rather die than be humiliated or embarrassed in public, especially women, by the way, where if they start talking about, oh, we have to do this, we have to do that. First, you isolate them and you say, we nothing. Nobody likes you and you're ugly and you're a cat lady. And when you drown in your wine, your cats are going to eat your corpse, right? Like, and by the way, the only reason you're in politics is because you're too ugly for modeling and no one wants to look at you. Just theoretically, I mean, you know, but like you go after their ego and then you blatantly, flagrantly point out how violating this is the principled solution. And so any of you Europeans, for one, shame on you, get out. But for two, like, I'm just kidding, by the way. I don't blame you if you live in Europe. But the thing is to openly, loudly, not only disobey, but humiliate the people who are responsible for these ideas, because that's what tears them down. That's what makes them back off.
I mean, the first thing is we shouldn't believe what they say now, because tomorrow it will be different. And after 2026, it will be different again. So what should now be forbidden, for example, that you can have your own ledger and send crypto to crypto, maybe in 2 years, totally different. Yeah. And if I can remember, I think it was the last show, last weekend, or two weeks ago, when Tony presented from, I think it was also Brian Armstrong, and he said Bitcoin is surveillance coin on steroids. So what we hear today, going this direction, huh?
Yeah, guys, I'm reading the legislation right now, and it has a section where it specifically indicates that the ban does not apply to hardware or software wallets, but rather to anonymity and chancing coins. I think that's what this law is aiming at specifically at Monero and coin joins, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
It's
different.
Yeah. I just wanted to make
well, yeah, you... Gonbat was actually responding to a question that if I'm correct, I think it was Prancing was asking. And then Doug also pointed out that people are taking it as though it's a ban on a wallet, but is that true? And, you know, the other thing is, and I missed a decent chunk of the price report just because of home situation that emerged, but Body actually pointed out something really important that anyone in the crypto space should never forget. They use these things to game the price and pump their own bags. So they'll push legislation and to drive the price down, get in low, they'll walk it back, ride it up, sell out, push new more Orwellian legislation, drive it back down. They'll use their exchanges to front run all of these other things. But as he wisely said, you can use this to your advantage as well, because they're actually not as smart as the people who built the technocracy panopticon that they now steer, right? The people who built our Orwellian nightmare in the 1920s were intelligent, sophisticated Luciferians. These people are degenerate crackheads. So they're not very good at strategy. They just have a lot of power and money right now, okay? You can predict what they're doing based on what they're saying, and you can even ride the dips by selling and ride the pumps by buying and all of this other stuff. If you just watch what they're doing, and you can increase your own holdings and you can increase your own bags, and you don't even have to compromise your own values. And this is one of the reasons why it's super cool that Monerotopia leads with the price report. Because that is one of our best battle spaces right now, is when they try to pump their bags, get your gains. When they try to, you know, when they try to divest back into cash, build your Monero stockpile. There's a lot of things that you can do by watching what the lizard people overlords or whatever are doing in order to position yourself better for the continued FUD legalese that they're going to just drop over and over again. Because as it's been said many times on Monerotopia, these people also need a place to park their cash. These people need a place to launder all of their drug money from their CIA ops or whatever. They don't want it to go away either. They just want to make sure they have more than you and you stay poor. Awful quiet.
I just wanted to say something, that the worst form of poorness is of the soul. But this is regarding that, your idea of dynamic block times from two shows ago doesn't make sense, because if you have knowledge is power over time, from the void we come and to the void we go. I don't take this as a religion or as a cult. And I think that the quantum entanglement will make the block time epsilon bigger than zero, and so that's not an argument. Thank you.
Hey, Drunk Diomi just pointed something out. Would you care to tell us how we can pump this trending on Twitter thing, Drunk?
I just happened to notice that Monero is on Twitter's trending topics for finance and business.
Yeah,
I'm probably, actually driving.
Probably because it just got banned.
Yeah, I'm driving. I'm just listening.
Yeah, I actually...
Hey, if everybody right now listening, if you have a Twitter account, if you say something in the financial space about Monero and then even put like a Monerotopia link or whatever, this would probably be a really good time to direct traffic and create a larger trend.
Having AI trading for us, and we play it in Monero, just locally on the corner. AI trading for us, we play it in Monero. That's great. I like that.
But it makes sense.
Got that. Can you share your screen showing us where you're interpreting this as a Monero ban? I mean, everything I'm reading is it's a ban on hosted wallets, not a ban on anything self-hosted and not a ban on any protocol. But
I'll share. I'm sharing right now. So I got it from Patrick Bayer. He's one of the guys who voted against this. He gave me a post, and here's a link to the legislation.
We got to get him on. He's the pirate party
guy. And so I just was looking for self-custod and found this paragraph, which basically says, it is necessary to prohibit the provision and the custody of anonymous crypto assets, accounts, or accounts allowing for the anonymization or the increased obfuscation of transactions. The provision does not apply to providers of hardware or software or providers of self-hosted wallets. So, pretty huge. I need to learn more about this.
Says the provision does not apply to providers of hardware and software or providers of self-hosted wallets.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't apply to Cake, for example. And then the damning part?
It is necessary to prohibit the provision and the custody of anonymous crypto access. So, I don't know if this, what it means by it is necessary. Maybe it's not actually enforced yet, but this is on the document.
So what I understand, it's like for third-party wallets where you don't have the keys to the coins. And for example, no KYC Max, for example, this crypto exchange. There you can sell money anymore and get your coins out of it. And I read a German article. They made a lot of discussion about it. So I'm pretty sure that this was good journalism there. So Cake would be still okay.
Yeah, I mean, hear this, because they do not possess access to or control over those crypto assets. So it doesn't make sense to ban Cake Wallet, for example. This is what I understand from this.
But that's the only reason they're not trying to take it. If they could get it, they would.
Ah, absolutely. Yeah. They just can't enforce it right now.
So it's like a little window into their intentions once they figure it out.
Yeah.
So I seriously think we should try to use this, what Drunk Dial Me was saying. Like, everybody should just start adding to the Twitter sphere to try to keep Monero at the top of finance. Right. And bring up the fact that there's now a way to pay for the use of AI with Monero, because that's literally what the show was about today. I mean, it could probably draw a lot of attention to Monero.
But that's getting on. I thought about your comment from last show when you said for IRS topics, for example, the transaction count points perfectly with the time where Bitcoin was at its highest and then $10,000-$12,000 drop. So maybe it got a trending topic because a lot of people use Monero for these purposes to shift some of their cryptos.
Well, especially in Southeast Asia right now, there is this gigantic incentive to use Monero, and people figured it out pretty quick. I mean, it's gotten to the point where, especially if, my wife is Korean, and if you pay attention to a lot of the more local news media in Korea, there's a lot of like online based local media in Korea. A lot of them are talking about using Monero for private transactions and for getting out from underneath the tax man and the regulators and all of that. It's a huge problem. For those of you who don't know how, specifically South Korea works, basically, the entire country and the government is run by the Chaebol, which are like the elite business families that are really, really well connected. And they get like a lot of outside Jew banker money. And so trading in and out of Korea is pretty much exclusively done through these Chaebol, which own all of the big companies like LG, Samsung, all of that. And if you want to get anywhere in Korea, you basically want to work for one of these companies. And if you don't work for one of these companies, you're kind of like a low status, a low status broke ass, let's just call it. And they are freakishly obsessed with education in South Korea. So the thing is a lot of people who are kind of wise to the controllers, and who know how the system works there, they're figuring out that Monero is almost like this magic bullet, because it solves the trade barriers that are like kind of voluntarily imposed by the Chaebol and the government, where if you want to do business outside of the country, you pretty much have to do it through the vehicle of one of these companies. And then they also use taxes and regulations and all of that to, well, since the big companies pay virtually nothing in taxes and get all of this free money, they can afford to pay you enough where the taxes that come out in all of these different forms, you still have like a middle class income, but a small business doesn't have the same leverage. Well, if you can get out of that tax system, you can actually compete with the Chaebol business institutions. And the thing is like the flood to Monero in Korea, both North and South, perfectly time with what we're talking about. And that's kind of my case about like not knowing if this has anything to do with an attack at all, is because I think there's actually better evidence right now that there would have been a massive spike in transactions all at once. You know, because I mean, look at what happened with FTX, right? News got out that they might not be solvent. Their stock plummets like overnight. And it's because like the speed of the news cycle is ridiculous right now, right? And so if people all figured out all at once in Korea that they could use Monero, you would see a spike like that the way that we saw it, where it seems like it's almost overnight and it perfectly lines up with getting off of. Because a lot of those guys may have learned about it and used it on a central exchange outside of the country, and then they exited when the exchanges were delisting. Like, I really, really think that there's not enough evidence to think that this is an attack, but there is some evidence to think that we would have had an organic spike in transactions that would be lasting. Now, if my thesis holds true, it should start to go down a little bit before it spikes again. Because now you would see the people who flooded out and were using it, they've probably done the transactions they need. It might come down a little bit. And then the people that they associate with will become adopters, and then we'd see another spike, right? But it wouldn't be anywhere near the order of magnitude that happened with the delisting and the IRS problem. And, you know, I don't know any of this. I'm just saying.
What's going on? Can I say something?
Sure.
Yeah, the last time you said that, I said that the price of Monero is function of the transaction volume.
I only
mentioned that the price of Monero should firstly, ideally, depend on the cost of mining a block if one block is one Monero. So that, I don't understand this MV equal PQ, like the velocity of that stuff. I don't get it, but yeah.
Well, the velocity of money tends to prop up the price is kind of the concept. That was one of the reasons why I was trying to get people to look into the concept of the dollar milkshake. I know that was like our after hours discussion because, 2 weeks ago, I didn't bring it up because it wasn't time. And then last week when I thought about bringing it up, you know, Doug and Tuxedo decided to have a life and they went to go have fun while the rest of us were just like watching from home, wishing that we were at the conference. but the idea and how that plays into the dollar milkshake theory is basically it's almost a function of Gresham's law, where even amongst crappy fiat currencies, the least crappy one absorbs the market share of the more crappy ones as people are fleeing their crappy fiat currencies.
Well, last time we learned that by Arctic Mind that the block is highly constrained in raising its size and it can only double. I don't know what that means. Is it Fn equal to n? However, I lost my train of thought.
It can raise, I think it can actually raise a lot more than just double. In fact, it already has raised more than.
Then it's n squared. I didn't do the homework. I don't know how much it can raise by, like, let's say 10 hours. But it's not a problem.
It's an average of.
This is an attack, or people are using. I think OGs are using this XMR haystack stuff. They're just hiding the outputs. And then it's going to be raised to 32. And then it's full membership proofs. There is no that availability problem. The problem, the question is, like, 50K transactions per second and quantum proof. That's it. Then we won. And you know what? You feel what I mean, man?
Yeah, I can't even remember who it was, but a quantum audit was actually done on Monero, like, I think 2 years ago now. They found very little issues with its quantum compatibility and its scaling quantum compatibility as well. There was a few minor things that the panel on the quantum audit recommended, but none of it was any kind of serious security viability issue. In fact, the funny part about it is I think out of all of the cryptos that have been audited for quantum compatibility, Monero was by far the best performer. It wasn't even close.
Because you don't have direct private keys to addresses. It's not the direct mapping, at least as I understand it. It stops at the blinding, you know? So it's different. It's completely different.
Yeah. But the thing that I was going to say about, like, the money velocity and the cost of mining a block and the profitability, there would be things that would need to happen before that would take root in Monero, and some of them are happening now.
But what do you mean? The transaction volume rises, and that must, let's say the dark market works at 150 euros a coin to transaction. Everyone transacts at that dollar value, right? If more transactions happen, do you mean that the price rises?
So yeah, the money velocity has an effect of propping up prices, not directly, but it's indirectly. So when money flows, it tends to concentrate. And when it tends to concentrate, that concentration has the effect of shrinking the supply in the area where the money is flowing. So even though it's not supply and demand in the traditional sense, it's still a function of supply and demand. So if I'm making money, but I'm not spending a lot of money and money velocity is high, I'm going to end up with more money faster. And if I still don't spend very fast, then what happens is less of the supply is engaged in the turnover rate of the money and the money velocity. So the money that is moving has a higher demand. So the existing money supply, as far as the function of the economy, is effectively shrinking. You could think of it like if $100 are trading in a pool of 10 people, but I keep saving a dollar every time I get two, right? That pool of $100 is quickly going to become a pool of like $70 and then $50. And the rest of the economy is still competing for the dollars that they can actually get, but they can't compete for the money that I'm saving. So, and by the way, that's one of the important reasons why a debt-based economy is such a nightmare, because the power of saved capital is diminished. So anytime you add money to the system and you're using debt, it actually drives down the value of savings twice.
Parasitical.
And so what happens is you create these massive price distortions in the market where things that people still need to use are less affected, and things that most people don't have access to have these wild price spikes. So have you ever noticed how, like, yachts and artwork and weird stuff that people, only certain kinds of people buy, the price just gets ridiculous, right? Like collectible cars or what? There are a lot of people that are interested in collectible cars, but because they're priced out of the market by mostly the two functions that we just described, the price of collectible cars just gets like stupid ridiculous. And then people who might be interested in collectible cars are faced with the either I get into the business of collectible cars, and most of those people are like mechanic types or whatever, or I continue doing what I'm doing and save for the next 70 years and maybe I can get the car that I want. Well, now you're pulling talent and resources out of the useful economy and driving them to these weird collectible economies, which, by the way, is exactly what is happening to Bitcoin. But any economist who's pumping Bitcoin refuses to acknowledge that something that is...
So what you're saying is that if the velocity is ideally low, what happens then? Like no, NFTs, yeah. Right? That's a joke and stuff.
Yeah. One thing that we would never want to do for the audience that may not get what he's getting at here. One thing you really don't want to do is have an ideal, right? You want to let the market play out and you want to try to do what's best for you and your family and your loved ones based on what you believe the market is going to do. Higher money velocity will usually lead to higher prices for the currency that money is denominated in, okay? But if that currency prices people out of the market, there are corrective forces, and then there are also the incentive to use different currencies. So it's just like in cultures where there's an issue with gold as money, people tend to switch to silver, right? It's happened over and over and over again. It would be the same with Monero, where if there was such a huge incentive to save Monero and spend in something else, what'll happen is it'll undermine Monero as a currency, but it will improve Monero as a savings vehicle. But eventually that's going to balance out, right? But in times of low money velocity in a currency, this one is a little bit trickier to wrap your head around because it's not always the case. But what seems to be the case is with low money velocity, you get low prices in the currency that it's denominated in. But the case that we talked about earlier, so for example, Bitcoin, where people are using it as an investment in a savings vehicle, right? The money velocity is actually going down relative to its price, but people keep looking at it as an investment vehicle. And so it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy until it's not.
What does that mean? What you're saying here, Alaskan?
So what I'm trying to explain is the money velocity of specifically if we're talking about Monero, the money velocity of Monero going up should eventually lead to an increase in price. An increase in price should eventually lead to an incentive to mine and other things that are peripheral, like running your own node would be incentivized by higher Monero money velocity. But then the other thing is people who have Monero and there's high money velocity, they'll tend to acquire more Monero, which will then shrink the supply further, which will then make the price go up even more relative to the money velocity. That's what I'm trying to say.
Hey, is there any exchange left in the EU that still offers Monero?
I don't use exchanges, so I have no idea.
Yeah,
no clue.
There is one exchange in Portugal, at least that I know of.
Okay, because that just got banned. That's definitely got banned. Please
just direct yourself to IRC Monero-PT channel. I guess you will.
Monero got banned from exchanges in Europe. I think that Kraken still offered Monero in most European countries, except for like the UK and maybe Germany.
Well, in 3 years from now, it won't be able to.
Oh, 3 years from now.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the direction things are headed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising.
Sarai deck should be chugging along pretty well by then.
Yeah, true.
It won't matter, though, because you won't be allowed to have a self-custodial wallet anyways in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, so apparently it isn't a ban to self-custody, but just the self-custody of anonymous crypto.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that's entirely right. I mean, from what I'm saying, I'm not saying a self-custody ban. I'm not saying that in what you showed. But, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. But
from what I understood, so at the very least, it says that it is necessary to prohibit the custody of anonymous crypto assets. So
yeah, and then the steps that they're doing towards that end is banning hosted wallets. I think it's just written in a confusing way, but I personally don't interpret it as that. But who knows? I mean, we need to talk to, I think, people that perhaps were part of the legislative process.
No, I think you're right, Doug. It's not about, like, they weren't banning self-custodial wallets, but they were, it did seem like they were trying to ban transactions at certain levels, similarly for how they do for cash. And that, like, if you transact above a certain level, then it must go through officially approved channels. So it was kind of cheeky of me just to be like, well, they're just going to ban self-custody or self-custodial wallets.
Well, either way, guys, we know. I mean, the battle lines have clearly been drawn. They've been drawn for some time. So things will only get worse in that respect. But I think we've all come to the realization that ultimately that will lead to better things for Monero in terms of being, building an ecosystem outside of the fiat system, being forced to live outside of the fiat system.
Body, I have a question.
Positive take.
Sure. What about FrackTrade, that bots to trade? Do you have any opinion on open source trading bots that eventually also can be paid in Monero? Like FrackTrade, I've heard about that one. But it only trades on Binance and KYC exchanges. And I don't, that's a whole rabbit hole of mine about trading. But I really want to do that, you know, to have a computer running on the corner and, yeah, trading for me.
I would definitely be careful about open source bots. You would definitely want to mix some of your own secret sauce into there. It just seems to me that, I mean, I'm kind of leery of bot trading anyways. Typically, they'll do good in a certain regime or market profile. And then when you reach some kind of fundamental inflection point, it seems like bots will tend to break down. So I don't know. I'm not really an algorithmic bot trader myself. I've never tried to implement one. I do have some ideas for some stuff that I want to do. I feel like, again, if you're going to do algorithmic bot-based trading, your most successful endeavors are going to be if you are able to find some kind of signal or pattern in the market that has not yet been exploited. That's really where, like, you know, the greatest people of the past 50 years in the markets that created sort of like trading firms that were successful. The original guys were basically mathematicians and physicists that came into the traditional markets and started saying, hey, we can use statistical analysis to find patterns here that have not been exploited. And then they exploited those with great success. So I would just say, like, if you're going to try and do bot trading, you need to develop something that that recognizes patterns and does it in a unique sense, patterns that are not yet exploited. So yeah, you definitely want to mix your own secret sauce with any open source bot that you try and find or that you try and implement.
And regardless of the greatness and epic situations there, do you know about any stuff that I can run just like, I don't know, I bought like 30 euros of some white cash shitcoin just to talk about it. I don't care, like, just throw the white. Just like something to experiment, to run. I know there are lots of bots. I'm just asking if you know of some of them.
No, I don't. I haven't really looked at bots at all, like in terms of running them for myself. So that would be a completely new trading area of exploration, but it's just never been my thing.
Okay, thanks.
All right, guys. Maybe this is a good pause to end it at. We are beyond the 4-hour mark. Anything else people want to get out there before we close it down?
Going once.
Yes.
Going twice.
Nobody said anything about recommending attendance at this year's Monerotopia in Argentina. If anyone is listening, remember, we're supposed to do it every day, Doug. How many people have told you you're supposed to plug it every day?
I got an idea. Sorry, I wanted to say something else about the Kunos. I don't know if you guys know that Shark Tank situations, like when you put the viewers on stage, there's that music, and perhaps you could put some other music that intros the Kunos situation, and then like prepare to be grilled or roasted and stuff like that, or I don't know.
Oh, for people who are proposing a Kuno, you mean?
I like it.
Yeah. Like
so it. Anybody listening, Monerotopia. We will all be there, especially people who say they're not going to be there. We know where you live. You better get here. But seriously, Monerotopia, I can vouch for the fact that the last one was easily like the coolest thing ever. And if you didn't go, you pretty much wasted your life. So don't do it again. Make sure you do the wise thing and attend the Buenos Aires Monerotopia November 1st through 3rd. I will be there. Probably won't be able to tell who I am because I might look a little different, but we'll see.
All right, we'll end it at that. Thank you, Matt, for being my best promoter. Thank you, everybody. Greatly enjoy the company. Thanks for everybody's participation. We do these shows every week, Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. See you guys next Saturday. Adios.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Monerotopia episode. We stream live shows every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. You can find and subscribe to our show on YouTube and Odyssey, or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter or join us in the Monerotopia Telegram group. See you all next week.